It's a good
intentional shooting victims compared to just one last year. People are afraid.
Sure. Hello? It is now 6:03, and this meeting of Community District Education Council 30 will come to order. My name is Roberto Cruz, and I am convening the annual meeting for the purposes of electing officers. Shannon Lee will now call the roll.
Thank you. Ms. Deborah Alexander?
Present.
Mr. Roberto Cruz?
Present.
Mr. Jonathan Greenberg? Ms. Katrina Harris? Ms. Fatima LaCari? Ms. Amina?
Present.
Ms. Nula? And Mr. Scott Sharon? And myself, Shannon Lee, present.
Article 2, Section 2 of the Council's bylaws require that officers be elected by roll call vote at the annual meeting. To be elected, a candidate must have at least 6 votes. Officers remain in position until their successors have been elected. The first order of business is to elect the chair pro tem to chair the election meeting until the president has been elected. The chair pro tem must be someone who is not running for office in the election he or she is chairing. Since the first election is for president, the chair pro tem cannot run for president. Once the president is elected, he or she can take over running the election from the chair pro tem. Are there any nominations for chair pro tem? You could also nominate yourself.
I was going to nominate Scott, but Scott, can you on the phone get to the script?
You're muted, Scott.
Scott, can you reach?
Okay, there we go. If you can get me the script, I can read the script. But
yeah, it's emailed to you. If it's inconvenient, we can always pick someone up.
It's pretty hard because
okay,
I'm at a baseball game right now.
Then Amina, would you be willing if we sent you the script? Could you be the reader?
No.
Sure. Then I nominate Amina.
I second. Sorry, girl. You don't have to second anything, just so you know.
Okay. All right,
Amina, okay. I'm going to send you the script. Annual meeting script here.
Well, yesterday, Jada,
Miss Meek,
okay, Amina. Yes, you guys.
I just emailed the script.
That's my background.
Okay, give me one second. My email.
Do we have to vote on the chair pro tem? Or is it just the
yes.
Unanimous? Nominations for chair pro tem are now closed, and we will proceed to a roll call vote for chair pro tem.
Shannon.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Deborah Alexander? Mr. Roberto Cruz?
Yes, in favor.
Mr. Jonathan Greenberg? Ms. Katrina Harris? Ms. Fatima?
In favor.
Thank you. Ms. Fatima? In favor. Ms. Amina? Ms. Nula?
Not here.
And Mr. Scott Sharon?
In favor.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Amina Maiza has been elected to serve as chair pro tem and will conduct the elections of officers for 2020-2021.
Thank you.
Amina, you start on page 3.
Give me page 2. Okay. Calling annual meeting to order. The next in bold should be read out.
No, Amina, no. On page 3, it says election of officers, and it says chair pro tem. That's where you go.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Okay. President, the chair pro tem cannot run for president once the president's in.
Okay, scroll
a little bit lower.
Scroll further down.
He or she can take over running the election from the chair pro term. For chair pro term, we will accept self-nomination.
Okay, so we did that.
Okay.
About five lines lower. Chair pro tem reads aloud.
Okay, chair, okay. The elect officers, we will vote upon each position for moving on to the next, so that any candidate not elected to an office can run for others. I will take nominations. Members can nominate themselves. If a member is nominated by another member, I will confirm that he or she accepts the nomination. Nomination do not need to be seconded. If member is not respond but has submitted his or her nomination writing to the AA or another member, he or she will be treated including having a 2-minute statement read aloud by someone else. Each nominee will be allowed to make a speech of as 2 minutes. Following the candidate's presentation, we will conduct roll call vote. All positions must be voted on, even if there is only one candidate. Where we are two or more candidates, each member must make a choice and vote for one or the other. Example, John Smith are running for president. On the roll call, each member will vote for either John or John. The council member not vote first on John, then on Jane. Member may abstain from voting. If no candidate receives at least 6 votes, we will vote by show of hands on whether to do a second round or proceed to the election for the next office. If a position remain in filled over 2 or more rounds of voting, the incumbent will continue in the position. New election for all unfilled position must be put on the agenda of the following month's calendar meeting until all positions are filled. Is the producer clear at all the members? Okay. Can I want me to continue reading or Robert? Yep. Okay. Start with the election of president or co-president. First, we will elect the council president or co-president. Are there any nomination for the office of the president or co-president? Ask each nominee if he or she accept the nomination, except for those who nominate themselves.
So stop now, Amina.
Okay. And
you need to open the floor for nominations for president or co-president.
Okay.
Ask if there are any nominations.
Any nomination for president or co-presidents?
I nominate Deb and Robert.
I second that nomination.
I accept.
Robert, you're on mute.
If Deborah didn't give me a boot, yeah, co-presidency is fine. We cover the breadth and width of a lot of things. Petra, yes.
Any other nominations? Amina, ask if there are any other nominations. Okay. Okay, Amina, now nominations are closed. Announce that.
Okay, Deborah and Robert, president and co-president. Okay. Okay, nomination is closed. Deborah and Robert are nominated for president and co-president.
Should we roll call?
Keep reading.
Okay. The office of president or no call. I will now call each candidate in alphabetic order to make a statement of up to 2 minutes. The AA will be the timekeeper. All candidates have spoken. We will proceed with roll call vote.
I am alphabetically first, so I will go first. Thank you to everyone on the council for graciously allowing Rob and I, but I'll speak for myself in this speech, for me to serve as co-president. I believe in our district and our council that we all have the same goal, even when we disagree on the solution. We all want to support and advocate for the families of District 30. I think we've proven to be a strong council, and I thank you all for being open to all ideas. I hope you feel like I've represented you well the past few years. This year will be a lot, so much going on. Our families will need us more than ever. Personally, I'm working on taking a page out of Hamilton. Talk less, smile more. You all have important voices on this council, and I tend to take up a lot of space and a lot of words. I promise to be more aware of everyone's time and make sure everyone feels heard. I will start right now by keeping this speech brief. So thank you all for a great year, and I look forward to the next.
Deb, that's Aaron Burr's line in Hamilton.
Hamilton, so I don't know if
it's a little bit disquieting that we're introducing this co-presidency. Deb, I hold in the highest esteem. I hold all of the members in this council in the highest esteem. It's a privilege to work for the council. It's a privilege to work for our district. And we all, I think our strength is our unity. And you know, there's disagreements on occasion, but that's not a problem. That's so long as we're working together and we work collegially with one another, we're get to where we need to go. And I look forward to working with everyone here, not just Deb as co-president, but all of our members. Because I think we have a lot of work to do. And we're only going to get there with the strength together, and hopefully we'll continue for this, that we could show that strength for the rest of our district. So with all of these dark areas that we're going to enter, that we could go successfully through them and navigate them. So I look forward to working with you if we're approved in this next year as we go forward. And I look forward for your vote and for just continuing our dialogue together.
Deborah and Robert, you have been elected to serve as council and president.
We gotta vote.
They have to vote first?
Okay. Yeah.
I vote for Deborah and Robert.
Thank you. Roll call. Ms. Deborah Alexander?
I'll vote for Deb and Rob.
Mr. Roberto Cruz?
I approve. Yes, Deb and Rob.
Mr. Jonathan Greenberg?
I'll vote for Deb and Rob.
Ms. Katrina Harris?
Deborah and Robert.
Ms. Fatima, Ms. Shannon Lee, I vote for Deb and Robert myself as well. Ms. Amina,
I vote for
Ms. Nula O'Daughtry,
I vote for Deb and Robert.
Welcome. Mr. Scott Sharon,
I vote for Deborah and Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, congratulations, Brian Rob. You have been elected to serve as council president or co-president for 2021.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Amina. We're going to jump into the rest of the officers. We're now going to take nominations for vice president.
Okay. I'd like to nominate Katrina Harris for vice president.
I'd like to second that.
Okay. Anyone else would like to nominate themselves for vice president? Please do so.
I'll nominate myself.
Is there anyone else? Okay. Okay, and I guess we didn't hear from Fatima. Each nominee will now be allowed to make a speech of up to 2 minutes, and we're gonna go in alphabetical order. We will start with Mr. Greenberg.
Thank you. I'll keep this short. I'll say, I think that we have had a productive year in many ways, and I know that I've had disagreements with some of you on some issues and agreements with some of you on other issues. I'll also say that I'm committed to listening and hope to do a better job of listening to all of you and all of our parents in the coming year. As you know, I take this work very seriously and try to prepare and learn and reach out to as many people as I can on all of the issues that we're faced with. So I think that I would be very pleased and honored to serve as vice president of this council.
Thank you, Jonathan. Ms. Harris.
Good evening, all. I have grown a lot being on this council with everybody, and it's been an honor to serve with all of you. I'm going to take this time and learn to listen to everybody and hope to learn even more. I enjoy what I do for the council. I enjoy working with our parents and our students, and it's been a great experience for me, and I would like to continue to serve as the vice president of the council. Thank you.
Thank you, Katrina. So Shannon, would you do the roll call, please?
Yes, Ms. Deborah Alexander.
Katrina Harris.
Mr. Roberto Cruz.
I'll go with Katrina Harris.
Mr. Jonathan Greenberg.
I'll vote for myself.
Ms. Katrina Harris.
I vote for myself.
Ms. Fatima. And myself, Shannon Lee. I vote for Ms. Katrina. And Ms. Amina. Ms. Nula O'Dotri.
I'll vote for Jonathan.
And Mr. Scott Sharon.
Vote for Katrina.
I have a, what's, do you know the numbers by any chance, Sharon, or Gail?
Oh, sure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 for Katrina and 2 for Jonathan.
Okay, congratulations, Ms. Harris. You have been elected to serve as vice president for the 2020-2021 year.
Thank you.
We're now going to proceed to the recording secretary. Any nominations? I'm sorry, I cut you off, Katrina.
Shannon Lee.
Anyone
I
else
second
like
that
to,
nomination.
You could self-nominate or nominate someone else.
I'll nominate myself.
Okay, nominations are now closed. If there's, is there a need for a vote if there's only one person voting? I guess so.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Ms. Deborah Alexander.
You want to say a few words, Shannon?
Oh, do I have to say a few words? Oh, no, just I'm glad to serve and to learn more. And I love reaching out and getting information from all districts, even Bronx, Brooklyn. So I love bringing that information back and sharing it with the board. And I'm just happy to be here and serve for my community.
Okay, the roll call.
Perfect. Sorry, it will disappear. Ms. Deborah Alexander.
Shannon Lee.
Oh. Sorry about that. It disappeared. Come and go back. So sorry. I'm working with a missing eye here. Where's it come? So sorry. Sorry, Blues and Vision here. Sorry about that.
No, can I help out? Can I do it instead?
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Sorry about that.
Okay, sure. Deborah Alexander.
Ms. Shannon Lee.
Robert Cruz, Ms. Shannon Lee. Jonathan Greenberg.
Shannon Lee.
Mr. Scott Sharon.
Shannon Lee.
Ms. Amina Maita. Ms. Katrina Harris.
Shannon Lee.
Ms. Nuala Hordorty.
Ms. Lee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't think we need to tally that. That's pretty uniform. Okay, thank you. Congratulations, Ms. Lee. You have now been elected to serve as Council Recording Secretary for 2020-2021.
Thank you.
Finally, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lee. We have one more office, and that is of Treasurer. Would anyone like to self-nominate or nominate someone on the board?
I would like to nominate Amina.
Would anyone else like to nominate someone else or self-nominate? Did anyone else chime in? No? Okay, nominations are closed. Mina, you have the floor for a couple of minutes. You'd like to speak for a moment?
Hey, thank you guys for all the the things we are doing together to help our community, our District 30. And thank you for Katarina. She offered me this, she voted for me for this position. And together we're going to do the best for the kids for the future.
Thank you very much, Ms. Maita. Shannon, I'm going to run through the roll call. So, Ms. Deborah Alexander.
Amina.
Mr. Robert Cruz, I will say Ms. Maita. Shannon?
Ms. Maita.
Thank you. Jonathan?
Amina Maita.
Thank you very much. Scott?
I vote for Amina.
Thank you. Ms. Maita?
Myself.
Thank you. Ms. Harris?
Amina.
And Ms. O'Doherty?
Ms. Maita.
Thank you very much. Congratulations, Ms. Maita. You have been elected to serve as treasurer for the 2020-2021 school year.
Okay.
Now that all the officers have been elected, the annual meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. We're going to proceed shortly. Actually, it's already 6:26 into our next meeting coming up. But thank you all. We have about 4 minutes. I'm sorry for the order, it wasn't in alphabetical order. I was going by Zoom profile, so I was just whatever pictures came up first. You're who I called on.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Oh no. That's the answer. We should have done it from the beginning, Shannon. You know, that's what we're here for. So we have the calendar meeting coming up, followed by the business meeting right after. I guess we'll see how it goes, whether we have a break or not. Scott, make sure you're not hit by a line drive while you're there. You know, don't get too involved in the discussion. I don't want to get the...
I'm in the foul territory behind the dugout.
Okay. Unless they hit a line drive.
Nah, see?
Ah, okay. Your son playing today?
Yeah, he played last night, so he's sitting now.
Maybe he'll come in later in the game. They don't play with masks or anything, do they?
Yeah, it's optional. My son plays with a mask.
Okay, sure.
Actually, we don't want any we've had enough mishaps during these last 4 months.
Sure.
We're good. We don't need any more problems. But yeah, tomorrow morning he'll be working out at 7 a.m. with a mask.
Oh, wow.
We've been doing this throughout. we just go early in the morning before anybody's out. And now it's opened up. We play out in Long Island.
A little cooler in the morning, I hope, too, right?
Yeah, but we're indoors.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not, we sneak into a facility. Okay, don't tell anyone.
It is recorded, unfortunately.
The facility is now open, so it's okay. And we've always worn our masks.
Okay. All right, guys. We're going to jump into the next round. Oh, goodness. We got a lot of attendees. Good evening. If our members are away, we'll ask them to, we're inviting them to return. But good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here. This meeting is called by CEC 30 and will be moderated by myself, Co-President Deborah Alexander, and our CEC 30 Administrative Assistant, Gail Cohen. This is a public meeting and is being recorded. Please mute your microphone whenever you are not speaking. The public comment session will follow the superintendent's report. You may speak on any education-related topic. Comments will be limited to 2 minutes. You will be given a 15-second warning before your microphone will be muted. We apologize for the abruptness, but would like to hear from as many speakers as possible. First, we will take comments from participants who have joined via computer in the Zoom room. Please press the hand icon to raise your hand. This can be found by clicking on participants at the bottom of your screen. We will call on those speakers in the order in which they raise their hands and manually unmute their microphones. When your name is called, please give us your name and what school your child or children attend. While this is a public meeting and anyone may speak, we are first and foremost interested in the thoughts of the parents and students of District 30. Second, we will take comments from participants who have called in by phone. Gail will call out the last 4 digits of your phone number and will manually unmute your line to allow you to say yes or no if you would like to say something. If you do not want to speak, please state your name. If you do wish to want to speak, please state your name and where your child or children attend. I will now call the meeting to order at 6:30 p.m. Shannon, are you prepared to do the roll or shall I jump in?
I sure am.
Thank you.
Ms. Deborah Alexander?
Present.
Mr. Roberto Cruz?
Present.
Mr. Jonathan Greenberg?
Present.
Ms. Katrina Harris? Ms. Fatima?
I'm sorry, I'm here. I was on mute.
Thank you. Ms. Fatima?
She's connecting now.
Ms. Amina? And Shannon, myself?
Present.
Is Ms. Mula still present?
Yep.
Perfect. And Mr. Scott Sharon?
Present.
And Fatima, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, thank you very much.
How you doing, Ms. Fatima?
Good, good. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you. Good to
welcome,
see you again.
Welcome.
Our first order of business is on the zoning of PS 384. Deb, you wanted to introduce this topic?
Sure. This is a discussion that we need to have the council. Just to bring everybody up to speed, remind everyone as well as the attendees, PS 384 is the newest school we have in Long Island City. It is currently being built. PS 78 has been historically overcrowded by a lot of children. And so instead, while the school is being built, because the school being built came after the overcrowding, the decision was made to incubate, they call it an incubator school, to incubate Q384 in a pre-K center. So there, it's, the school has sort of started. They have a principal, they have a number, they have the school that's been aging up. Since then, while the school is being built, and a year from September, the school will be ready for them to attend the physical building, and they will just pick up and move themselves into the actual building. Where the CEC comes in is that we have to approve zoning lines. So normally, what we would do is, in the year before a school is opened, we would approve, we would discuss with the DOE what they see as the zoning boundaries for this school. The DOE has, in addition, what complicates this further is that there's another parcel of land that the DOE has given has allotted for Long Island City. And another school was supposed to be already being built. And the plan initially was And there was even a third school that was going to come when Amazon was coming. That school, we don't know what's happening now, but we know for sure we have these two parcels of land with two schools that were supposed to be built. Because of COVID, the second school has not begun construction. And we don't know when it will begin construction. The initial discussions around zoning Long Island City, we had some interesting ideas about this opportunity that we had with multiple new schools and potentially looking a little more broadly at zoning, both in the immediate southern Gantry and Hunters Point area, as well as north of the bridge into the Long Island City that's Queensbridge and a little bit north. So these were very preliminary ideas that were floating around before the schools were even built. Here we are now, and the DOE is saying we don't even know if and when the second school will be around, but we have 384 in front of us. So we have two options. We can either zone PS 384 right now, as it is with no broader plan, or the DOE has said we could just hold off for a year and zone it next year when we'll have a better idea and have some more time to look more holistically at the district. Hopefully COVID will be in our rearview mirror and we can have a better idea of the landscape in terms of construction in Long Island City. This is very near and dear to Long Island City for so many reasons. So I informally met with the PTA presidents of PS 384 and PS 78, as well as the chair of the Gantry Parents Association, just to see what their take was. The DOE has given us some time constraints, so if we were to zone PS 384 now, it would have to be very quick, because the deadline to zone it would be, to get that zoning in place, would be November of this year. Right now, obviously things are very complicated. It's the summertime. We'd have to start immediately having outreach sessions. Many of you know that it's a long process to zone. And we wouldn't be able to think creatively and think outside the box with zoning Long Island City. If we wait, we would basically start probably in the spring discussing zoning for the following year. So the folks in Long Island City, the leaders that I mentioned, all seem to think that waiting the year was the appropriate way to go. With those recommendations, I am now coming to you guys to see what you all think, whether or not we should zone PS 384 for next fall, or by which I mean a year from the fall, or wait a year. And then one other thing, the zoning for PS 384, if we were doing it now, is basically the zoning that they have. They are overflow for PS 78. So it would basically be it'd be a similar zone. Again, we couldn't think about possible integration. We couldn't think about different kinds of zoning that we could do. We wouldn't have the time or ability to do that now. We don't have enough of the facts to do that now. So given what the leaders in Long Island City are telling me and given what I'm thinking about, I would recommend to the council that we postpone the zoning for PS 384. They would continue to be, they would continue to populate PS 384 for one more year, just like they've done now with the overflow from PS 78. That's what they've done for the past 2 years. So that's the situation, but this is a council decision. So I'd like to hear what you all think. And we can go from there. We also don't necessarily have to decide this today. If folks want to hear more from the Long Island City community, I think that that's appropriate. We have district planning coming to our August meeting. Might be something to ask them questions about as well. So that's this agenda item. What do you all think?
So do we have any of the numbers, Deb? How many kids are at 78? How many are in the overflow school? How big is the new school? What's the plan on populating it? Is it year by year? You can just move the kids into the new school. Do we have any of those numbers?
That's a Dr. Compostio question, but I believe it is the way it's always been. Like, we've had 70 or so kids overflow from 78, but Dr. Composto might have the actual.
That's exactly what's happening. We do about 2 to 3 classes, no more than 3 classes on each grade. So we've run K1, now we're doing 2. The other piece here is that what the district planning said is we'd have to move quickly before November. If we were going to go vote for this now, we'd have to do it before November. So the time gives everybody a chance to have conversation.
So as you guys know, it's actually uniquely easy to have the meetings now that we can't meet in person, to set up Zoom meetings for the community to talk about it. So can we hold some kind of broader community meeting to talk about the future of zoning Long Island City?
I think we totally could. The issue isn't that we can't. The issue is that we don't know about these other schools. We don't have any information on when Parcel C is going to be built, if it's going to be built, or the possible, now there's the Annabelle Basin project, which is proposing a potential school as well. So we don't have listen and hear, absolutely, I have no objection to that. It's just we don't really have the information to think more broadly yet, is my only concern.
So how many kids are going to go into the school that's going to be built? And how many are currently in the overflow school?
Well, so, am I still on? Or?
Yep.
Okay, so it's not about how many children are going in there. That will not be ready until September 2021. At that point, they will move over the K1 and 2 classes, and then, of course, the third grade would be then put that year. These are like, they're growing the school like everything else. So it's one grade at a time. So it's not this September, the following September is when they'll go into the school. And that's actually when they're recommending that you guys do your zoning. In other words, what I understood was this year coming, right, from, you know, November, December, whatever, this year you guys would start engaging the community in this conversation. And by the end of the year, or very latest, the beginning of the fall, we'd have this whole zoning thing worked out. Because don't forget, it takes 1 year. So we're really in the process now. September 20 is here, right? So now we're just going to start this process. And like you said, Nuala, it's probably easy to, the virtual meetings, you seem to get more people too. So you can ask that question in August if they can give us a timeline. But what I understood is when come October, November, they were going to start engaging the community. Well, first they engage the CEC, right? They come up with all these plans. Then we go out and we go to the community and we show all their plans. Then they come back. And then, you know, that you guys massage it with them, and then you keep going back and forth. So it gives you a whole year to do that, starting this September until the following September. So in reality, you could have it zoned, if all goes well, for September 21. As those children go to 84, all the zoning that you want to do in the Long Island City area could take place by then 2021 as well.
The president of the Parents Association.
When will we see the maps with the density?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
When will we get to see the maps with where the kids are? And, you know, the standard maps they show us about where the kids are and where they think the students are coming from.
Right. Well, you know, we can ask for that in August, you know. I have no problem with that. We can ask for that.
Well, can we ask them to bring it in August? So that
We can ask them to bring it. I don't know if they're ready with all that. You know, I don't know if they're up to that, but we'll certainly ask. We'll certainly ask.
Seb, just to take the temperature, you spoke to the Gantry Parents Association. Did they have an appetite for this kind of dialogue now, or do they want to postpone it?
They felt, Gantry and the presidents of 78 and 384 felt like having more time was better.
That seems wiser, you know, from my perspective also.
So I'm inclined to support this. It seems the last thing I want to do is rush this zoning. I think it's really important given some of the issues around in Long Island City, given the demographics of Long Island City, that we not rush this, and that we give the DOE enough time to really engage with parents, and us to engage with parents as well. I'm not sure I feel comfortable voting on it now. I think that I would really love to hear from the community, both at this meeting and then from between now and next month, to just get more information and get other perspectives. before I commit to that, but I'm very much inclined to agree with Deb on this from the start.
I'm 100% comfortable waiting. This whole thing about like what we say in the public and all is such a difficult thing. So I would love to hear from the Long Island City Public too. I couldn't put all of that on our agenda, but at the same time, I wanted to give the council the respect to tell the council mm-hmm. what went on before we engage the public. So it was just a tricky thing of time, but I there's no reason I see that we can either call a separate Long Island City meeting if you like, or do it in August. And we can draft something that goes out to those community members that explains all of this and invites them to come and give feedback.
So Nuala, I was just thinking, I just want to jump in. I'm sorry, Deb.
Yeah,
they wouldn't have any maps because those children from 384 are zoned for 78. So I can get you the maps. Maybe is that what you're looking for, Nuala, the maps of 78?
No, what they have, the DOE has, is this micro demographic data, which tells you how many kids, you know, age 2 to 4, how many kids age 4 to 5, they think live on each and every block.
Oh, okay, I can get you that. If they have it, I'll ask.
Yeah, and I want it
micro demographic data.
I want it from the bottom of District 30, kind of Long Island City, Sunnyside, all the way up to Astoria, so that we have lots of ideas on how to best zone this. Because without the data, we really can't make any decisions.
I also think we need to hear from SCA a little more than just sort of vaguely, like, we don't know what's happening with Parcel C. We have to know what tools we have. We should also find out, and I can do this, but we should also find out what's happening with the construction projects, the Annabelle Basin project, because if that adds another school to work with, or will be, that's information we need. But yeah. I agree with Nuala in getting all that data.
Can we invite Mike to the August meeting?
We can. August is really packed, so if we understand, you know, but I think that's a good idea.
Even if he doesn't speak, just so that he's there, so when the questions come up, he can chime in.
Look, Mike was one who traveled when we had to go from school to school. He'll be fine, I'm sure, to zoom in if he can. So yes, that's a great idea.
Okay.
All right. So we will push this to August. I will come up with I will share a document inviting that we can send out. I don't know how broadly you guys want to send this out, because if you're looking Sunnyside and Astoria, I mean, we could just send it to our email list, and whoever wants to come can come. That's fine too.
I think sending it as broadly as we normally do is fine.
And we'll just explain the issue a little more concisely than I did, and invite people. Think about if you want to make this a special meeting or not. If we can always add that, but otherwise it'll be August.
The district planning is coming to the business meeting, not the calendar meeting. So
right, that's okay, because so district planning is coming to our business meeting to talk to us, and then they're coming again in October to talk to the public. So
yes.
If we hear from the public about what we send out to them saying mm-hmm. here's this issue, we can hear during public comments and then meet with us with district planning after. So
okay.
What are they coming to do? What's the purpose of the visit at the mm-hmm. business meeting?
They go over, you know how they give us that data worksheet, and they go over sort of the data, and then in preparation for their talk to present it to the public.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll see it in August. Next will be our superintendent's report. Dr. Compasso, are you ready to take the floor?
I am always ready, and willing.
We expect nothing less.
There you go. So first, I want to congratulate all of our offices. It's been a pleasure for working with all of you. You are wonderful, great people, and you are making a difference. And I thank those offices who took their position today to step up and continue to do the great job that 30 is doing. So congratulations to all of you. So first thing on my agenda is we had an interesting meeting today with IS 145, with the district planning and the Office of Student Enrollment. And basically, there was a concern about the we have a magnet grant in there that we're not taking enough children off the magnet grant. But the reason is that these are zoned schools. All of our middle schools in that area are zoned schools. And we have to keep a large number, has a large zone area, so they keep a number of seats. They have these formulas that they keep their seats for. So the essence of the whole conversation was going back and forth. The magnet school money is wonderful for us. It really gives us an opportunity. We have taken many of these over the years, and they're millions of dollars to help us do great things. Like IS 145 has a beautiful STEM room and a great dance studio, and they've reduced their numbers tremendously at the same time, but being able to keep this magnet school grant. And I think the thing that I like that came out of it is the Office of District Planning and the Office of Student Enrollment need to communicate better, because there was some kind of a misunderstanding about caps, and because there are no caps, and it just went sort of back and forth. But I thought it was a good meeting. I think that as we move forward, it's good for these two offices to communicate better and with the school as well. And we have the opportunity to say to the Office of Student Enrollment and District Planning, you know what, we want to take an extra 50 kids and see if they have the room. They'll never let us do it, because right now 145 is 101% overutilized, which is right there. It's not real, you know, it's right there. But those who have been around, we came down tremendously with that. They were like 180%. We had up 2,400 children in that building at one point. Bottom line is that it really worked out very nice. It was a good conversation. And I think that, as we move forward, the Office of Student Enrollment and the District Planning will work better together in helping us with these particular grants.
Can I just say one thing about that?
Go right ahead. Go right
ahead. Which was that my point was actually, I think that's, if I would love better communication between those two offices, but my point was actually really about the magnet office communicating better with those two offices as well. So that when we get these grants, that the goals that the magnet grant has are intimately coordinated with the other departments, you know, enrollment and district planning in the DOE.
Fair.
So Dr. Kapasra, I'm confused. So maybe I'm late to this game. So this is my understanding, is 3 or 4 years ago, 145 got that great magnet school grant. And the purpose of the grant was to increase or decrease minority isolation, to increase diversity, which would mean non-Hispanic students in that school. And they had goals set in that for a couple percent each year of that. And the school took the money, they did great things with it, they worked really hard, they did some great things, and it actually worked. They actually got kids who were non-Latinx to apply to the school. And then a bunch of those kids weren't allowed to enroll in the school, even though it was their first choice. And it caused a bit of an uproar in the community, because, you know, we as the community members have really pushed to try to diversify the school. And then we kind of succeeded. We got a couple families to apply and be admitted, or apply and put it as first choice. And then they were all rejected.
So I know
there's all sorts of complications to explain it, but that we have a bit of a problem in the community now. And the problem in the community is that we kind of went and we begged people to say, let's make 145 more diverse. Let's change the perspective of the school. A lot of people kind of thought of it as a school only for immigrant and minority kids, and that it wasn't well respected. And they used that magnet money to really change its,
its culture
in the neighborhood.
Its appearance, right.
Yeah, and they really did a great job. And then when the kids started to apply to it, they all couldn't go in. And I know it's because it's at 100% of capacity, but as you pointed out, compared to the 2,400 kids before, it seems crazy not to let the few diverse kids who applied to come in.
So this is
where
the
machinations just made us all look kind of silly.
So this is what happened here. So there was a list of 150 children, and these children, the white kids were sporadic. You can't go onto this list and just say, we're going to take the white kids. When these lists come out, in all fairness, and this is federal magnet rules, no matter who that child is, they have a right to go. There's a list, even though they may not fit the demographics that you want, but they go first. So then nobody can just take children off this list, and it has to go number by number. And so that's why sometimes not everybody gets in. And I hear what you're saying, but That's the law, that we can't just take off the list and look for a particular race. It has to be fair, and no matter what person applies, it goes by their lotto number. However they figure it out and we all get a number, then that number works for us, not our race. That's the way this works. Good, bad, or indifferent, I hear you. But I think the school did do a wonderful job. And I'm going to be fair, there were a lot of staff members who at the SLT meeting who felt like they put a lot of effort into this. And they wish that they could take more children. But no one's willing to go back to where we were. And I know, Nuala, you know exactly where you were, that your daughter was there. So you know how really those hallways were unbelievable. We're using the cafeteria to teach our children in. So the magnet thing is great. We're going to keep trying to get it. I wrote an email today to see if we're going to have an extension on it. And we can look at it, you know. The only thing is the difficult part is we can't just pull children off the list. We have to be fair. So whoever comes on the list, we have to go one child at a time.
I just want to say that the goals in the grant are not just about reducing minority isolation. They're also very importantly about reducing economic isolation. And we see in Jackson Heights that many families, this is not about adding white kids to this school. You know, nobody, you know, I don't want to, isn't this about adding magic white kids that are going to make this school diverse suddenly. But we see over and over again that the school is overwhelmingly poor immigrant children, and that families, whether they are white, black, Hispanic, often are who are middle class and who are part of certain social circles or you know, circles of information are often opting out of the school. Nobody wants to cherry pick anybody off that list. But I do think that the goal of integrating the school is not just about reducing minority isolation. It is very, very importantly about creating a school that is attractive and welcoming and nourishing for kids, whether they're immigrants, you know, they just arrived in this country, whether they are poor or wealthy, and whatever their racial or ethnic background is. So I think that this is a larger issue than simply saying we were going to cherry pick the list to get, you know, non-Hispanic kids off that.
But you have to understand something, Jonathan. That's the good part about this. All that money went to branding this school. All the beautiful things that they did, those videos, doing those rooms, they did brochures, they went on trips, they visited schools. All of that was done through this magnet money, you know? So that's what helped us. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that our hands are tied sometimes and we have to work within the boundaries which we have. For example, I did get us that they can go on that list and take another 10 children in order if we need them, because we don't want to become, the school leadership team was very clear that day. They don't want to overcrowd the school again. They're okay with their children having these specialty rooms, as I know you are. You fought for 212 for years with maybe, and you were on their CEC, on their SLT, that we shouldn't be overcrowding these schools. So we're working on it. Okay. The economic crisis caused
by... Wait a second.
Yes.
So I think I missed my point. My point is that the community and the school worked really hard on that.
Right.
And it didn't work. I understand the whole complicated caps and all that kind of stuff, but I think we still need to kind of say, even though it didn't work, that great successes were made. And I want to make sure that we acknowledge those people who worked really hard at 145.
Even the magnets, I've asked them for their report. I'll share their report with you. They have said great things. They point all of that out, that all of their outreach that they've done, all of their branding that they've done, they talk very highly of it in the report. I've called today. I haven't gotten answered back yet, but as soon as I do, I will share that report with everybody, I promise.
It also brings up just another fundamental problem, which is that the zone schools have to keep this reserve cap, which non-zone schools don't have to keep. So.
Right, well,
145 needs to be able to accept anyone who shows up in September. I understand that. But there should be a way that the non-zone schools also get a certain number of people who just show up in September as well.
So
I think that's just a fundamental unfairness that we need to work on.
Right, and actually they spoke about that as a CEC, if you want to unzone or rezone all of these schools, you can do that too. You know, they did speak about that today too, that CECs have the right to rezone, zone, unzone. You know, that's your call on that. So maybe something to talk about in the future.
So very specifically, what I think we need to point out is that the unzoned schools should be required to take a certain number of kind of newcomers, people who just show up, and that same kind of reserve cap should be on all those schools too, so they can take those kids. I mean, we saw from 227, there's all sorts of weird zoning things you can do. I mean, they have requirements, a certain number of kids come from IS-61 and this and that and the other. So I think we could be a bit more creative about it.
Well, that's a court order. That whole thing with 61 and 227 is all about a court order. 145 does not have a court order. We can play much more with 145 than
that. I think there's a difference, too, between enrollment making priorities and the CEC changing zoning. So I don't know what the, you know, how perhaps... I heard today on the call, you know, that part of the concern is making sure that we always have seats for zoned kids. And that's the whole point of having a zoned school, right, is that there are seats for the zoned children. So you don't want to oversubscribe like an airplane and then not have the seats for the ticket holders, so to speak. But I wonder if there's something in that enrollment can do via the priority system that doesn't change the zoning, but perhaps I understand we can't take race into account, but can, you know, just like Q300 just passed a diversity proposal where they're taking 40% of children with a lower socioeconomic status and from NYCHA. That's something the school can do, number one, without messing with zoning, and that's a whole different school, but it's a thing to do. So I wonder what we can do with priority that wouldn't necessarily involve the whole long process of rezoning.
Maybe that's something we should invite off the student enrollment in with district planning and see, you know, ask them some questions and see if we can figure it out. May I go on? Are we okay?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. The economic crisis caused by COVID-19 is putting a significant strain on the city's financial situation. And as part of the city's recent budget agreement, programs were asked to absorb cuts, including $9.1 million in our community schools. So we have three community schools in District 30. We have PS-149, IS-230, and PSIS-111. And basically, they have said to us that they're getting a cut. They're not sure how much or what it's going to look like, but they did want us to get ready that a cut is coming to the community schools. So, and that's all I know, but I did want to at least share that with you. Summer school, we're up and running. So we have the elementary, so we only have two schools this year. PS-166, will all of our elementary school children go there from grades 3 to 5. And we also have our middle school is IS-204, and that's grades 6 to 8. So those two are done virtually. So all of our children in the district go to those two schools virtually. So I just got you some numbers, and these are very rough numbers. I'm just trying to pull it together today. So at PS-166, we have a total of 518. So elementary school children throughout the district, we have 518 going to summer school. Out of that, only 36 of those children are mandated students, meaning that they're potential holdovers. The other 482 are recommended. There are children that could certainly benefit from summer school, but are not mandated to go. And for IS-204, we have a total of 910 children, 339 are mandated, and 571 are just recommended. So these have been going on. We started on the 6th. Let me give you some more facts here. We're using this platform called iLearn. Didn't work out too well for us the first 2 days. It was too much volume, the kids getting on, parents were upset. It was a job, but by the second day, we were able to get everybody on that we needed to get on, and we're rolling now. But it was a little tough going with that particular platform. It was a brand new platform, never used before. So, of course, whatever kinks happened, could happen, did happen, but we got through that.
Can I ask a question about the mandated kids at 204?
Yes.
So how would they be mandated? There were no state tests to pass or not pass. So how would they be mandated?
So there were many children that might not have been doing well the first three semesters. So don't forget, this was really easy for us because we had three full semesters in. So if the children did really well or just passed those three semesters, they automatically did it. But if you were a student who failed all four semesters, you're mandated to go to summer school. And a lot of them are eighth graders for the high school piece. But they did give passing grades to all of our children that deserved it. But if you did not do your work and you had no reason, they're the ones who did not pass their courses.
So do we have, there's over a third of the middle school kids are mandated then. Do we have an understanding of the mandated kids? Are they actually showing up remotely?
Yes, right. So that's what we're looking at right now. Like I said, we had a rough beginning the first 2 days. We couldn't contact those children, unfortunately. So we're trying to figure that out now. But I did ask, and let me see, I got here, IS 204, 67% of them we were able to capture.
But I guess my question is more specific.
Yes, you want to know about
the 339 mandated kids, what percentage of them are attending?
We don't know. We don't know yet. We'll
can
let
we
you know
out?
Once we pardon?
Can we find out?
If we can find out, but we're just doing this. Don't forget, it's our second week. We lost
one
of the
first
2 days.
Yeah, no, I'm saying in the future.
So we don't have enough data yet. We got right now, we're still getting our kids, you know, acclimated to coming every day, coming to this time. But I promise you, once all the, you know, give me a week or two, and we'll share all data with you. Okay. Okay, they have a great program. Summit City Activity Challenges and Virtual Field Trips. The DOE is hosting several weekly citywide activity challenges and virtual field trips this summer for students in K-12 from July 13th to August 17th. These challenges are virtual, self-directed, and independent experiences ranging from students expressing themselves through dance and song to create a pixel portrait of themselves in Minecraft. Additionally, there are 106 virtual field trips that allow students to visit extraordinary people and places, learn about remarkable events in history, and explore fascinating topics online. So it really sounds like a great program that we have up there for our children. I recommended it. If anybody knows of anybody, please let us know. We are asking, actually, if I give you the website, it's right in the notes. You'll see they can go right on the website and do it themselves if they like. A lot of people have asked me about these PEBT cards, which stand for Pandemic Electronic Benefit Transfer Program. These are food benefits. This is a federal program to provide food benefits to children who miss the opportunity to receive school meal due to the pandemic-related school closures. More information about this program is available on the DOE website. And basically, they will pay any parent the money that their child should have had for lunch. Some of those cards are up to $400 or better. So if you know somebody who didn't get one who has a child in the school, they are certainly entitled to it. They can go on the Department of Education website and find it. If not, they can call the district and somebody can help them walk them through that.
Can I ask about that too, Dr. Composto?
Of course you can.
They sent out an email yesterday with an 800 number to call about it. But when you call the 800 number, you can't get a person. I did try calling. The very specific question I have is, are they transferable? So a number of people wanted to donate their car. And so, I'm not going to get anyone to answer the question.
And neither can I. But there was the principal who showed me something that was going around that an organization was like doing it. But I don't feel comfortable sharing that because, as I said to the principal, what do we know about this? You know, it's nothing that's organized. But yes, many people have approached us. We've escalated that question, and the principal found this organization that was doing it. But I can't recommend something like that because I don't know it. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I just don't know it.
What I'm trying to find out is that appropriate for the program? So my understanding is that if you already had EBT, the money was added on in June. So they've already gotten the money. If you had Medicaid, you're getting them now. And if you didn't have anything, You're going to get them in August. So I don't know anyone who's gotten them yet as a separate card. So they didn't have EBT before. So these are going to be the wealthier families. So my question is very specific, if you can get anyone to answer this, is when they receive these EBT cards, which they've never had before, is it transferable?
Yeah, I've been asking that question. No one's answering that for me. Is right. it transferable? I will ask again.
So yes. Can I jump in?
Sure.
When you receive these EBT cards, you cannot transfer that nowhere. It's against the law. That would be like fraud. So if they're giving you this money from the state, from food stamps, you are supposed to use that for your family. You can't sell them. You can't transfer it over to anything else. You can't do that because they will get locked up and they will go to jail because that's considered fraud. So okay, once they send you,
people never applied for them. That's if you.
It doesn't, Nula. Listen to what I'm saying to you. It doesn't matter if you apply, they never applied for it or not. If they're giving these people these food stamps, you are to take them food stamps and feed your family. You are not supposed to trade them over to nobody or sell them or transfer to another card. You cannot do that. They can get in trouble, and public assistance or HRA or whatever you want to call them, they can hold them accountable and they can get locked up and go to jail. It's considered fraud. It's being done now.
So I asked,
people are doing it now. And you're not supposed to do that.
Katrina, I asked HRA. I did ask HRA. And HRA said it was up to the state. And they were waiting for guidance from the state.
So I just heard from Kathy Nolan's office. Katrina is right. Kathy Nolan's office said they spoke to
you,
the state. And the state office overseeing the PEBT and the cards are not transferable.
They're not.
Correct.
It's just like you can't take your food stamp card and go into a store and buy beer and liquor and dog food and things like that. It's only used for food to feed your family. And the state is not going to allow them to take that card and transfer it over to anything. It's just not. Every month, Nula, I don't know if you know, the beginning of the month, people get their first stipend. And then 2 weeks later, they get their second stipend. So, the beginning of the month, you get however many food stamps you get for your family, and you get cash. The second week, 2 weeks later, is your B-check. Your B-check is just cash. Not only are they giving you cash, but they're giving you extra food stamps after they already then gave you food stamps the beginning of the month. So why would anyone want to take that money and transfer it over to something else when you're supposed to be taking it and feeding your family?
I'll tell you why, Katrina, because some families think they might not need that extra $420 and want to donate it to families who do need it. And that's
but it's open to everyone. It's open to everyone to get that money, Nula. People can go, HRA is open today. They can go down there and they can apply for the food stamps, and in 24 hours, they will have food stamps on that card.
Right, but Katrina,
it's not a problem.
I'm going to get an EBT card for my two kids. And so if I don't want to use it and want to give it to someone who needs it, that's the question. So it sounds like...
I heard a webinar about this. You're giving this person
your EBT card. If that's the case, Neil, you take the person and you go shopping with that person and you swipe it and you use your PIN number.
You just don't give somebody
that card with a personal PIN number and say, here, take it and just go do food shopping. That's why the state won't allow it to be done.
From what I understand, Katrina and Nula, the cards that are listed, they're not transferable. Whoever the guardian for that child is, it will go to that guardian. Now, if you don't take the money, you will lose it. It'll just go back to the bank. If you want to do something with that, to give it to somebody, what you do is you could purchase non-perishables, canned goods. You can make purchases with that and then just give out the donations that you purchase. That's the only way to actually give that money to someone who might be in need.
My other suggestion is use the, if go grocery shopping with the card and then make the $420 donation that you would have spent on those groceries and give that money as well. So there are ways around it, but yes, 100%. I'm hearing from parent coordinators also that if you are, it seems crazy to dispose of the money,
It's lost. It's already on the card. You won't get it back. It'll just disappear.
Yeah. So there are ways that you can still do good, but you just have to work around it. Use the money for yourself and then donate that money.
That they won't. The food stamps will stay on the card as long as it needs to stay on the card. The only thing that they will take back is the cash. The food stamps, they will leave. If the cash keep accumulating, then they're going to say, well, you don't need the cash, so we're going to take that back because they're not using it. But the food stamps can stay on the card as long as it chooses to stay on the card. They won't take that back. They will just take the money back because it's not being used for anything. The food stamps, the family gets to keep.
Okay, I'm going to go on. So beginning July 1st, parents and guardians will be able to view their child's IEP information in the New York City schools accounts under the IEP icon. By default, only custodial users can view this information. That's something new. So to all of our special ed children, their parents can get their IEP right there in their school account, which is a good thing. So the revised timeline and guidance for a comprehensive education plan. I think I told you this once before. We've gotten a 30-day extension. We are now saying instead of June 30th, they are due on July 24th. I'm trying to see here. And also, with that being said, extension services students turning 21. They also talk about extension of services of students turning 21 by August. The DOE is planning to extend service to support all students who would be aging out of the school system by August, but are in need of continuous support for graduation or transitioning to an adult post-secondary program. So they are given an extension for our young people, who, even though they just turned 21, but due to the pandemic and all, they get to stay for another semester to help work it out and transition in. There's a revised timeline for the language translation and interpretation plan. So schools have been given also along with the CEP to July 21st to do the plan. The plan is basically telling how are they going to use their translation money with their for their parents in their school with their parents. Our meal hubs are still up and running on Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 1:30. All meal hubs began offering take-home pizza meal kits. Take-home pizza meal kits can be cooked at home using an oven, microwave, or toaster oven. Meal hub patrons can pick up pizza alongside the grab-and-go meal offering, and this option will continue to be available throughout this summer.
Can I talk about that, Dr. Kumasa, a bit? I just want to thank you. Last meeting, you gave me the numbers for the meals. I thought it was really enlightening. The numbers were huge. Here in Jackson Heights, it was 11,000 meals a week. So I wanted to see if I could get updated numbers. I was really surprised at how high they were. At one school, PS69, gives out over 4,000 meals a week. The three schools that are next to each other, 92, 149, and 148, give out almost over 7,000 meals a week, and there's a few off each other. So I thought it was very interesting information. I've shared with others just to kind of show the food insecurity in the neighborhoods. So if you could send me updated information, I'd really appreciate it.
I certainly will ask for it.
And I like the peanut butter sandwiches.
Pardon?
I like the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
This week, the fellow who does it is on vacation. So I'll talk to him next week, and I'll be able to hopefully get it for you next week, okay? Meals weekly.
Thanks.
So write that down.
So I don't they're better that. Than 7-Elevens.
Is it? Yeah?
Very good.
Summer reading. Families can access free ebooks and audiobooks this summer for all ages. Students can read ebooks and listen to audiobooks through the DOE using the ebook reader. SOAR is available to all New York City public schools students. You just need your DOE account name and password. The app is available on the DOE issued iPads and can also be downloaded to any internet enabled device. I gave you the website that if you guys are interested in for your kids or you know any of the community members, it would be a wonderful thing to share with everybody. Good news, we heard discretionary awards through the New York City Council member Danny Drum. He gave us our $5,000 as he does each and every year to be used for our parent engagement. So we just got that today or yesterday, I think. Today we got that. So he gave us our $5,000. And the last thing on my agenda here is I have given you a separate sheet here called School Building Reopening Preliminary Plan. I'm not going to read it to you, but I do want to highlight some pieces for you. So we know that the chancellor gave us three models that he wanted schools to choose from. I want everybody to understand that a lot of our schools, or most of our schools, have large numbers, right? So like a model like number one, that means you can fit 50% of your children in the building, and then you can do that 3 days, 1 week to the next, and vice versa. But if you don't have a small amount of numbers, so all of our schools that have under five, which is just about a handful, can do 50%, so that'll be better for them. But our larger schools with these 1,600 and 1,500 and a 1,200, it's a lot harder. So if they go to model two and three, that's for those that can fit one third of their population at a time in the building. So with all of that being said, is that we don't have the variables. And I want everybody to understand, like, principals are being asked to do this, and it's all like a formula fits together. For many years, I was a programmer. I was a principal for 12 years, and I programmed my own school. So first of all, you got to know how many children that you have. Now, parents have until August 7th to tell us whether they're going to opt in or opt out. Teachers, as of tomorrow, have the opportunity to fill out forms to say that if they can come back, what they're calling brick and mortar, our school buildings, or should they stay home and do the remote learning because of some kind of a health condition. So all of those variables have to be answered before we can completely program this, these pieces. And I've been hearing from parents, like, they want to know. They want to know, like, some people don't feel that their children are only going to go to school once, twice a week. That's not going to be enough. So we're trying to do the best we can to get several scenarios going. Without those two pieces, number of children and number of staff, it becomes a little bit difficult, especially the student piece. The staff piece we can always figure out, but we need to know how many kids are going to go remote and how many kids. Then we can figure out how many kids we can fit into our building if we can do a 50%, because, you know, most of the children are staying home on remote. So I just wanted to give an opportunity to talk a little bit about that so everybody know that this is our biggest challenge that we are now in. I gave you the entire document that comes out of the DOE that you can read it at your leisure. So I believe that's the end of my report. Any questions for me?
Yes. First of all, can you send us the report?
We didn't send it to you? Oh, I apologize.
That's okay. Second question is, do you know when our NYSIP meetings, if and when our NYSIP meetings will, New York State Integration Plan meetings will resume?
So, you know, we applied for the grant, the second grant, so it's still in the works. So we have had nothing yet on that, but we did apply. We were one of the districts that have got a chance to throw their hat in the ring again, and we're hoping for success, but we won't know until I think September. I don't think they're going to let us know before then, unless you heard something.
Nope, just curious. Okay, so we'll look for September then, hopefully. And then I wanted to give you an opportunity, if you want to, because I know some parents are here to talk about it, to address the issue of the teacher in our district who has said some disturbing things. And I don't know if you want to address it or you want to wait for parents to talk about it, but.
No, I can address it. Of course I'm going to address it. So, you know, these are personnel things and I can't really say anything, but I can tell you what we've done. So we got that, sent many emails yesterday. So the first one that we got, Mr. Prayer got, she called me and I said, we're going to call it in. So we called in the first one and we've been sending them all. We sent it to OEO, Office of Equal Opportunity. And we also sent it to the Office of Special Investigation, not making sure that we hit all bases. So they will make a decision on what office will handle that. Once they do that, they do the investigations. But they do have the video. They have all the emails that were sent to me. And I've asked Mr. Prayer as well to keep sending them to OEO and the Office of Special Investigation.
Do you know about how long an investigation like this might continue on average? I'm just thinking about September and this teacher potentially being in a classroom.
Right. So I don't know, but we've escalated it up, and that was one of the things we asked. And I, that was the piece that I said, I did, look, she's not teaching summer school, so we're okay for the second, that, you know, so but we do have to figure this out. So I did escalate that question up, and we're waiting for legal to let us know when we can do the, when they can do, you know, do this investigation and move this forward.
To my council members, I would like the CEC to have some sort of formal response to what happened. I would like to either have a resolution drafted or a letter drafted. I think it's important that we have people of color, either from the council and or from the community, have input in that letter. So I want to let the community speak, but I'd like to discuss that at the end or in our business meeting at some point. So keep that going and think about what we can do to have some sort of response as a council.
So this is the first that I've heard of this. So I know we can't identify anybody, but is there anything else that you can say to perhaps give us, fill us in a bit?
Yeah, I think we could just say the situation was that, I guess on Saturday, there was some kind of a protest taking place in Bayside. And what I understand was that there were two clashes, Black Lives Matters and Blue Lives Matters, and some verbal exchange took place. And that's all I really know. And that during this verbal exchange, so inappropriate things were said. Is that fair? I don't know. That's
well.
What
I mean, racially inappropriate things were said. Yeah. And you know, I will send you the video, Jonathan, if you want.
So I have a question before you start, and Deb, I would like for you to send me that video.
I think the entire CEC could get it.
Yep.
So wow. So was these racial things said by the teacher?
They were.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so not only are we dealing with this issue again, but I just want to bring to the council what happened at LIC. And it's this whole big thing that's being investigated as well. And where the teacher had said something at the UTF meeting, a couple of teachers actually, that was very racial. It was all on Instagram and Facebook. The students seen it. It was sent to the superintendent. It was brought to us at a SLT meeting. So I don't understand. I can't speak for everybody on the council. I can only speak for me. I don't understand what seems to be the problem, that people are saying some of the hateful and cruel things that they're saying about my color. And I don't want my child to go back to no school where she has to live in fear and have to worry that this is what she has to deal with when she goes back to school, if, quote unquote, we go back to school in September. So this whole situation is very disturbing. And I didn't join my SLT meeting yesterday because I just feel that some of the teachers was backing these teachers up, and I don't understand why. So now here we go with another issue again. Something has to give, and we all need to get on the same page. So Deb, whatever you choose to do, I'm going to support you 100% all the way, but I'm already dealing with something already at LIC. And now you're getting ready to hit me with something else that somebody, that another teacher has said. And it's not our children's fault. And I don't get it. I don't get it. That's all I wanted to say. I wanted to share it with you guys. Dr. C, I will email you and I will send it to you because you are the superintendent, so you can see what we're dealing with in LIC.
Yeah, I know. Lindsay is the superintendent, but she's been talking with me about it. Because I happen to know some kids over there, too, you know, who called me and I spoke to the superintendent, Miss Lindsay.
Yes, my daughter graduated from there. Oh, sorry, excuse me. My daughter graduated from there. 2019, and for 4 years, we, you know, it's always been like certain issues that you bring up, and but yeah, they do have a lot of issues over there sometimes. Yeah.
Yes, they do, and my son graduated from there as well. So here we go, but yeah, it's rough. Okay, that's all I have to say.
Gail, what's
I'm looking forward to seeing the video.
What's in the bylaws about community members joining committees? Is there anything in the bylaws? I would love to have some sort of committee, but have it be open to participation by community members.
Sure, can do it.
Can do that. Mm-hmm. Not just in the audience, but actual, you know, members of, yes, of the committee. So let's talk about this a little bit later, so we can get to our public now. But think about maybe that as a first step to address the larger issues of racial injustice in our district.
Doctor, was that everything?
Yes, I'm finished. Thank you. Anybody else have a question for me?
Yes.
Thank you both very much. Oh, yes.
Yes. This is about next year. There's so many questions, and I am sure that we'll get lots of them in our public comment. But I am concerned about the model that they brought out. I'm specifically concerned because we saw at many schools that, and I've said this before, that there was very little, if any, real instruction happening between teachers and students remotely this spring. And we know that whether it's because a school is full, school building is full, and students will be in school only one day a week or maybe 2 days a week, or because perhaps there's another spike in the pandemic, or because, you know, families choose to keep their kids all remote, that remote learning will be very, very important in this coming year. And that remote learning will constitute for probably all of our students in this district the majority of their interface with their school. And to me, if remote learning looks like what it did in the spring, it's just not acceptable. And I just want to know what's being done to ensure that there is more, a lot more real instruction between teachers and students, and of course other staff that need to be involved with students in the remote situation, in particular in this hybrid model.
You mean synchronous, right?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Synchronous. Yes.
Right. So we understand that, and we've escalated that up to right now. The chancellor is working with the union to come up with an agreement. Now, we do know that they worked an agreement where teachers who taught summer school had to go live synchronous learning. Right. So we don't know for September. We're waiting to see. It is something that they're very much aware of. That is something they've been talking about. We all agree it's the right thing, but of course we have to wait until we get the guidance from Central on how this will look.
So I just want to add, follow up one thing, which is that it's not just about synchronous instruction. It's also about best practices and sharing information, because some teachers in some schools are doing this very well, and other schools, there really doesn't seem to be the kind of skills or knowledge or, you know, and so it's about having it be synchronous, but also working on improving their skills in this new kind of.
So you should know that we agree with you 100%, and the borough office has offered all kinds of training this summer for our teachers, you know. So we have offered many different pieces for them to do, and it's about blended learning and all different strategies. You talk about different platforms they can use, so on. So that's what we're doing this summer, because we do recognize that we certainly do need more professional learning. And then we got to see what our other model looks like, right? Like 3 days on, 2 days off. What does that look like?
So when we met with the DOE, with Diana Jonathan, she sort of hinted at the direction they're going. I agree with you 100% on everything you said. I'm actually, I was certainly one of the lucky ones who had teachers over the remote learning who were present some of the time and were engaging. I felt like school ended pretty, you know, with the lessons that they began because they had their teachers, their classroom teachers. My concern is with what I believe is going to be the model, which is they cannot have the classroom teacher teach 6 hours and 20 minutes and then also teach remotely. It's a physical impossibility, as well as a union impossibility, I'm sure. So what their intentions, as I understand them, are, is to gather as many folks with teaching certificates from Central, from the substitute pool, from wherever they can, and as well as the teachers who get medical exemptions to stay home, and those will be the remote teachers. So my daughter, who's on a 1 day a week, 2 day a week schedule because her school's so crowded, will see her actual classroom teacher 1 day a week and this teaching certified person 4 days a week. So you're absolutely right. They're going to have much more interaction with the online teacher, whoever they may be, than their actual classroom teacher, as well as no cohesion in the class because their class is completely fractured. Dr. Composto is right. There's no way they can know any of this until they know how many kids are coming, first of all. But my concern is absolutely in the quality of the remote. I think what they're going to do is add up the quantity of remote learning and sacrifice the quality, because now we have teachers who are not only haven't either ever been in a classroom or in years been in a classroom, but now we're throwing them into a completely new, something they were never trained for. On top of that, I believe the teacher survey about asking for exemptions is the week after the parent survey is due, which puts us mid to late August. So we won't know any of this until late August. So I don't know. We're back to March, where the teachers had a week to figure this out. So they are only going to have 2 or 3 weeks before they know what's happening. I don't have an answer. This is very hard. I understand it's very hard. I'm concerned that they've had 4 months and this is all we've come up with, but I'm deeply, deeply concerned. And I'm glad to hear, Dr. Composto, that you are at least championing the more in school, the model one. And I encourage you very, very much to encourage principals to get creative with outdoor space or find the space, because we have so many schools that are going to be on that 33% schedule. And it is just heartbreaking to me to think that there, and I have no idea how this is going to work for middle school, where my son could have a classroom teacher 2 days a week and then a different subject teacher throughout the remote learning, because I don't know who would be certified to teach both algebra and history. So they're going to have different remote teachers throughout that they've never met before. You know, I don't know, but I share your concern, but I believe that is what they are intending to do.
Now, by the way, I didn't hear that, but I heard it from Diana too. I was like, whoa, look at, she has this. We have not heard that. And I escalated that right up the next day. I said, did anybody hear that this is happening? They did say they are collecting names, but they didn't say they had a plan. So I don't know.
No, but the chancellor mentioned it too, or the mayor. I think when they first came out with the plan, they said that they will be looking at anyone who was even at Central or anywhere, you know, retired, similar to what they did with the first responders.
But it goes back to your plan. These are our children, and it's an educational piece where I like the question you asked the other night to Diana, which is, how will the teachers get a chance to talk? Like, in other words, you have my daughter 2 days, you have my daughter 3 days. When are you meeting to say what you're doing and I'm doing so that we do the right thing for the young person? So a lot of questions, good questions.
So Dr. Composto, my question is about, so the schools that have 1,000 kids, right? The big elementary schools, 69, 149, that are already at 100% of capacity. I mean, will they even get 33%?
Well, we're working on it. I heard Deborah talk about these large spaces. So the one of the things they're looking at is taking over large spaces. The other thing we're waiting to hear, these lunch, will children be eating lunch in the classroom? Or will children be eating lunch in the cafeteria? If they're not using these cafeterias, we could turn them into classrooms. You know, you can get, you know, or a gym, you might be able to get 30 people in there with six, you know, depending on how big the gym is. So we're looking at all these large spaces to get more children in. And it's just, we don't have the data. We don't know how many children are we talking about. You know, are we 50% or 30? So that's what we really have to just wait and see here. What are our numbers of our children? And of course the teaching piece too, but we can always fill that in. At least if we know how many children are going to stay home remotely, we can start a program and then fill in the teachers after we group the children. So, you know, and what they've done, the first thing that they've done, they've asked all of our principals to go back with their team there and look at the space and to remeasure with the custodian. And we've had about three or four schools that found more space, you know. One school didn't, they had something put in. So, you know, it all depends. You know, they're looking at this very smartly, but we are looking to get as much room, as many children as we can safely in one time, you know. And the other thing we're talking about with these programs, we shouldn't have too much movement with our children. So one of the things that we're trying to do is, like, look, we're working with the junior high schools that maybe we can take like a wing so that we have four classrooms where the children don't move. They stay in their room and the teacher moves back and forth. Because if we start, especially in our middle schools and high schools, if children start moving from room to room, are we going to wash down the desk before the next group of children come in? You know, so there's a lot of questions that we've escalated up to Central trying to figure out before we can really come up with a solid, safe plan. One of the things we're looking at also is, you know, if children are going down, you know how you go to the supermarket, they make you go down an aisle to go up. We're trying to think of ways in our schools. Teams are going in, looking at these schools and trying to figure out paths for our children to move safely. Some kind of markers that children know to stay 6 feet apart. So we're thinking, there are lots of forward thinking going on right now. But like I said, until we have the real data, it's really hard to offer programs to parents. But one of the things that I insist that our parents understand totally is that we do have these large schools, and before, and it's sort of like a catch 22. Many parents are saying, well, I want to know. If you tell me that my kids are going to go to school one day a week, maybe I won't do it. But we can't do that until we know how many children. That's what, you know, we can only, because we do have large schools. We do have large schools. And it's, so we're in a sort of a catch 22, but we're just waiting now until we see how many children will sign up, and we're going to figure it out.
I know that right now the logistics are focused mainly on, you know, the physical aspects, but is there any forward-looking discussion to the educational pieces where are we looking at how we're going to evaluate the kids when they walk in the door? Are they using the traditional grading system? How are they factoring COVID in now, similar to remote learning or something different? Are there discussions about that, even if not
yet? Yes, we have plenty of discussion. They're working on the academic policies. We are also trying to ensure that we definitely need to assess our children. As a matter of fact, in District 30, I'm working with Central trying to get a special program in. I'm hoping I get it, which is like an AIS type of a program, and to help fill the gap. So if we get it, once again, it's money. It'll help us be able to do these small pieces with our children. But the first part is always assessment. So if we get them into the building, we're going to assess. Now, if we can't get them into the building for whatever reasons, we're going to have to assess online. And I know people say it's not the greatest thing, but we need a baseline. So we're going to have to figure out, and maybe we're having great discussions, how we can assess our children one-on-one online so that we get the best possible results from these assessments. So yes, we definitely have to assess our children, figure out where this gap is, and then proceed to fill the gap.
What about schools that aren't full, like PS 398? Will other schools be allowed to use some of that space?
We offered that space to Vinny, you know, 152, because he's the closest one over there. He could go in walking distance. But I know also the principal at 398 is working with her community, and they want to get everybody in there, you know, because they have room to spread. But I think in working with her, we can do both, you know, we can do both. But I don't know if 152 or any school will take them up on it, because to do that, you have to have a supervisor. You're going to have a, you know, a school aide. And, you know, you have to have people there as well. You can't just put children there and teachers, because teachers have to go out on preps. They go to lunch. They have their admins. So we are certainly looking at that space for, to, you know, we've offered to a couple of the local principals there.
The other question is, I know it's a high school, but a design came out for the high school and the old Sports Authority on Northern Boulevard that was just atrocious. Is there a way we can ask them for an update on what's going on with that?
Sure. So do you want to know what's going on with the high school where?
So the high school that was in the Sports Authority, it's like in Woodside.
Right.
In the Boulevard, they published in the paper a design that looked almost like a state prison. and there was great outrage. I just want to know what happened. Are they going to have an updated design, or how do we get an update on that?
Yula, I wrote to Mike Mirasola about that a couple of weeks ago, and I said, do you have any further renderings? And I explained that people were upset. He said, still a work in progress. What you saw was very early, and the final design is some ways off. Give it some time once things are still... give it some time. Things are still on hold at the SCA.
Okay. So can we just ask SCA for an update on it?
I wrote it down. I promise I will with your other questions. Yes.
And the other one is, what about the custodial budget? My understanding is that, I mean, most of the custodians I know are covering two schools. I mean, they were strapped before COVID. And now if we're going to have kids in the building and we're expecting every classroom be sanitized. Who's talking about the studio budget and how are they planning to get that done? Are teachers going to be responsible for sanitizing their classroom, or is there going to be just a huge increase in the studio budgets?
So I no one said a huge increase in budgets. I like that statement though. But I did hear the chancellor say that they're going to get these packs. You know how they clean the subway with those bottles, like those spray bottles, that the schools will be getting them to do these deep dive cleanings that they talk about. And you're right, you know, like I look at our schools and there's one or two workers there, cleaning people that basically just sweep the floors and, you know, do the best they can. I don't know if they can do a deep dive. So I think they're going to have to hire or figure out a way to do a deep dive clean, because you're right, it has to be done properly if we're going to do it. But I don't know about the custodian's budget being increased. We were told that any of the personal equipment, the school will not be responsible to buy. The Department of Education will be sending it to us. And there's another question that we're looking to answer too. What does that look like when our young people and staff come back? What is expected? I've been getting calls, like I got a call today asking me if they should have their child, you know, tested. Will that be a mandate? We did not hear that. We have not been told any of that. So we're just waiting to see what our next move is here with that.
If you hear anything on the cleaning front, I just want to let you know a lot of parents are very concerned about what the chemicals are that are being used. So this is, I'm sure you don't know the answer to this now, but please put it on your radar.
I was told that it's green products. That did come up before, because that was one thing that a parent said that, you know, was her big thing with the allergies. And I was able to get to somebody from the facilities, and he said to me there will be all green products. I'm sorry, somebody asked me a question. I didn't.
Nuala, were you about to ask a question? Did we lose you? No?
I think she's cutting out.
No, are you there, Nuala?
No
questions.
Okay. I just want to add something to what Nuala said, or follow up on that, which is I've said this before, maybe not at our public meetings, but with FACE, that it seems to me that asking principals and individual schools to be responsible for their own plans is really way too much to ask. And the idea that a school, because its building is mostly empty, could have kids four times a week or five times a week, like 398, because nobody else really has the capacity to do what it takes to get into that building, is to me a failure of the larger institution of the department, you know, that they're not doing more to help coordinate where there is space, where there isn't space, what are best practices, You know, this is, it's just too much to be asking principals to do this. And I also, like, similarly to that, you know, it's very clear that not all students are in the same, need the same level of services or the same level of in-person, you know, learning as other students do. And we've seen other departments around the country do more for equity in their plans for reopening. The Seattle Department of Education said that students receiving special education services, students experiencing homelessness, English learners, students furthest away from educational justice, K through three students will be prioritized for additional in-person instruction or supports. And the fact that we haven't heard anything similar to that kind of statement from the DOE is really a shame.
Well, you should know, you should be proud of our principals. We're having that discussion. If we can figure out 4 days and that fifth day for those young people that are really in need of being in the building, it's really a challenge. It is a challenge, but we're doing it.
Yeah, I'm clear. I mean, to be clear, I'm not accusing you of anything. I think this is a failure of the larger plan and the larger department.
Yeah. But I take those things personal. I'm the DOE, I feel sometimes, you know. But we're thinking like that we literally have several principals that are talking 4 days and that fifth day be like a special day for those youngsters.
Any further questions for anyone on the council? We're going to have some public agenda and speaking time that's going to commence if no one does. Anyone in our public have their hands raised, Gail? Yes, okay. Then I guess we could open the floor.
Just a reminder, please raise your hands if you'd like to speak. We'll call on you in the order in which your hands are raised.
First is Megan. Megan, you're unmuted. Megan?
Gail, can you just call out the people with their hands raised so they know they're coming up?
Sure. So we have Megan, then we have SS, then we have Kathleen, and then we have Anna. We have four people. Okay, we'll come back to Megan, maybe?
Yeah, they should be able to see the order on their screen.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back to Megan. How about, all right, SS, can you unmute yourself?
Yes, I did. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you state your name for the record, please?
Sure. My name is Shannon. We have a five-year-old who is going to enter kindergarten at 384. We also have a two-year-old. But I wanted to talk about the zoning of 384 real quick. I'm not sure if everybody has a map in front of them, or if you want to take a second to pull up Google Maps. The problem that I'm foreseeing, so by the way, I'll just say up front, my vote is to postpone the decision. There are five residential towers that are being constructed within two blocks of the new 384 building. None of those towers will be habitable by the time September 21 comes up. And then even in the following year, only one of those buildings will be. So one of the buildings is now looks to be at its final height, but needs an exterior. Second building is not at its final height. Third, fourth, and fifth building. Third is in the ground. Fourth and fifth, not yet started. So I can't imagine a zone being decided for an elementary school that is surrounded by five residential buildings, three of which that are still in the floor. So I think, you know, yeah, we would have to definitely postpone for at least 1 year. But somebody had asked how many children will be in the school of the zone. Those people do not even live here yet. Those buildings are not habitable. So you won't actually know how many children totality will be in 384, at least until I would estimate 2025, 2026. So I don't really know if you can have accurate data to make an informed decision. At least for another 5-6 years. You might have to go year by year, reevaluating the zone every single year to account for the thousands of new people that are gonna be in the building. And also just to give you guys a bit of a scale, all five buildings are within five blocks of PS 78.
Really great point, Shannon. I just wanna, just for your information, the DOE has a formula that they use to calculate the average. It's a very complex formula that they don't wanna share. They do projections based on anticipation. They tend to be wrong. They have historically counted only right. One bedroom homes and not counting studios and that sort of thing. So we will be able to have some sort of estimate rather than year by year, but you're 100% right. I agree with everything else.
So since those calculations were just recently done for the Hunters Point South first phase, Katie Black's building essentially, since we have those calculations and now we have the real numbers because those children are of age and the DOE can then see, okay, we thought there'd be 100 kids. There's actually 500. That's our margin of error. So they can know how wrong they might be for the future decisions.
Agree. I think that's a smart point. Yep.
So.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
No problem.
And just a reminder to all our public speakers that there's a two-minute limit. So just try to keep it under 2 minutes, please.
Janik, please keep joining us for these meetings. Those were really good thoughts.
Okay. I just didn't know I had to wait an hour and a half to speak them.
Megan, are you back?
Yes, thank you for your patience. And thanks for letting me speak. I really want to also go on the record and agreeing with those of you that I think that we don't need to rush the zoning of PS 384. I think we do have time. And I think what I would like to see with that time is a willingness from the DOE and of course the CEC to think outside the box when it comes to zoning. I think this is an opportunity for us to be really innovative and lead the way in integration and equality in New York City. So I just, want to reiterate that that's very important to me as an individual. And I think this is an opportunity we should not squander. But I think we really need to get a commitment, a firm commitment from the DOE that they are going to engage and think outside the box and innovate along with us. Regarding the schools coming online in Hunters Point South, initially there were two schools that were supposed to be built in Hunters Point South. Right now, basically it's going to be one, which is PS 384. Everything that I've heard from the SCA is that second school, there's so many problems with Amtrak, who owns the land, that me as an individual, I don't think that school's gonna get built, to be frank with you. And now we have the developers at Annabelle Basin promising three schools. Again, those are not binding agreements. Those are just what the developers are saying. And we are nowhere near going through ULURP on that development. So again, it's going to be up to the community to really hold the Department of Education and our elected officials to account to make sure that they are building, not just planning, but building the schools that we're going to need, not just in Hunters Point, of course, but throughout Long Island City, so that we can innovate, we can lead the way in thinking outside the box in zoning. I would love to see that the CEC host a meeting that is specific to SCA so they can talk about the Hunters Point South parcel, but also address the other issues and questions we have, things about like the design of the schools, et cetera.
And we're at 2 minutes. Thank you.
I'm at 2 minutes, okay.
You can finish your thought?
Regarding PEBT, because I don't have to censor my thoughts about this, I would just urge anyone who does not need their PEBT, who is food secure, to use the card to cut down on any kind of bad connotations or associations that might have, so everyone can be using it, and please donate the money, the dollar amount, to City Harvest or one of the mutual aid relief organizations. So that's my 2 cents on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Megan, just so you know, we always every year host SCA when they present us our capital plan. It is usually in here from November to January, but we will for sure have a meeting where we have SCA. In the past, we've also asked that enrollment and district planning come as well, because then they can't point the finger to the other department. But yeah, we will have them, and all of those questions can be addressed with SCA.
I mean, I know people are tired of the same things I'm tired of, but I would like them to come to the meeting, all of those offices, answers to the questions. We already know what the questions are. They know what the questions are. They need to come with answers in the future. Thank you. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Okay, so thank you. So Anna Lee is next.
Hi.
Anna, can you unmute? Okay.
Did that work? Okay, great, thanks. Hi, my name is Anna. I live in Jackson Heights. I'm an Asian American parent of a rising third grader. He goes to PS 217 Roosevelt Island, for which the G&T class is from District 30. In this comment, I don't want to address the specific incident of the teacher captured on video, but rather the issue of racism in education in general. Personally, it doesn't surprise me that there are racist teachers, not just because I or my family and friends have personally experienced it, but because it just stands to reason. If there's racism in our society and schools are a part of our society and there's a power dynamic involved in schools, then there is racism in our schools and it affects our children. I'm not talking just about the use of racial slurs. It shows up as 1,000 daily microaggressions. When an educator presents cultural customs or dress in an othering manner, or makes an off-color joke, or when they shame a student for an accent, or when they continually censor the voices of only some students and not others, or discipline only some students and not others. Not that we need a justification for why this is bad, but I know some people need to hear this. So this affects academic outcomes. There's abundant scientific evidence that young children develop their self-concept, their core concept of who they are, based on how people in positions of power treat them and talk to them both directly and in front of their peers. And it affects how they solve problems, life problems and math problems. I remember when the George Floyd protests first started, a lot of our schools were putting out reading lists to help parents discuss race at home. And I really appreciated that. And when the resolution to get the NYPD out of DOE schools came up, I was a supporter of that as well. But one thing I was really waiting to hear and that I didn't hear was, what are our schools doing to address their internalized day-to-day racism? How can schools deal with complaints about micro and macro aggressions with openness and transparency, so principals and school leadership don't succumb to the temptation to protect their own? This results in broken trust. How can we do this with accountability, so there's a year-to-year community of practice that becomes part of school culture in each school, so that everyone in a school community can feel safe talking about their experience of racism? How can we restore trust when it's broken? How can we make sure school educators get ongoing, accountable, anti-racist training? I think the restorative justice models can be really useful, because ultimately restorative justice is about rebuilding community trust. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Thank you. All right, next we have Gavin.
Good evening. My name is Gavin Healy.
I don't hear Gavin.
Gavin?
I think we just lost him.
Okay. Hopefully he will come back. There he is. Gavin?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I just want to say, that I appreciate the efforts of the superintendent and the CEC to represent the community and to address this issue of the racist rhetoric of a teacher in our district. But more importantly, I want to amplify some things that I've heard from other parents in our district about this being an example of institutional racism. I think the words and actions of this one teacher are indicative of institutional racism within the schools of District 30. So I'd like to see action that goes beyond the dismissal of a single teacher and beyond some brief training for educators in the district. I mean, I'm grateful that this matter is being reported to the OEO and the Office of Special Investigation, but it can't end there. This has to also be about what teachers and administrators in District 30 schools need to do every day on an ongoing basis to incorporate anti-racism in their work. And that work should not be about schools just sending more letters and online resources to parents and students, which is really all that we've seen so far. I think that schools really need to work themselves, and the work they need to do is to educate themselves about how they can respond to this sort of thing in a more vigorous and transparent fashion for all of the members of the community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So next we have the Movement of Rank and File Educators. Can you unmute yourself?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure how I'm signed in as the Movement of Rank and File Educators.
That's what's appearing.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I must have.
Hi, can you unmute yourself again, please?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
So I apologize, I'm on the wrong Zoom account. I am a parent in District 30. I have a son who will be in eighth grade at IS 145, as well as a son who's moving from 228 to 149.
Can you state your name for the record?
Sure, it's Marnie Geltman.
Thank you.
So I echo the concerns that the other people, that other parents are saying about needing to address anti-racism, but I'm going to talk about something that I haven't heard addressed so far that I heard in Dr. Compasto's superintendent's report, and that is the fact that our community schools are getting a cut that other schools in the district are not getting. So I think as the CEC, you should be very concerned about this. I sat on the SLT at PS 149 for a couple of years. I'm not on the SLT at this point because, as I said, my son is going back there for third grade. But I know that 149 already has been forced to access teachers because they, the same as 145, they lose students over the years. And when you lose students, you lose money. So Dr. Compasso spoke quickly. I heard that the community schools are 149 and I think 111, but I didn't hear what the other ones were. But I just want to say, this is something we really need to look at. Obviously these, I think there are three schools.
230, 149, and 111.
Thank you. That these three schools are losing funding that none of the other, 35 schools in our district are losing. So I just think we need to look at that and figure out how we're going to support our school, these particular schools. Honestly, I have a whole page of notes of things that I could address, but I'll write probably an email to everyone in the council like later on this week. I know I only have 2 minutes. But I guess the other thing that I want to talk about is somebody, I don't remember who it was on the council at some point, talked about like the educational needs of students. And I just want to point out that's super important, but also our students are going to need counseling, when we come back in September. Like, this has been, a difficult experience for everyone. And I also teach in District 30, and I have students who are sick. I have students who lost family members. So I'm very concerned about, the educational needs of everybody, but I just think that that one of the first
things
we have to think about, I'll just finish my thought and be done, is how to provide counseling. None of our schools have enough guidance counselors. The teachers really need to be trained. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Marnie, thank you for reminding me of a question. This came up earlier today. Dr. Compasso, my understanding was every single District 30 school has at least one guidance counselor. Am I correct in that assumption?
That is correct.
Okay, and yes, we need more. I just wanted to make sure that at least we have one in every school. Thank you.
But the trick is that we have to keep them because we're trying to work out the budget now, right?
So is the number of guidance counselors above one simply the discretion of the principal? You know, if you have 2,000 students in your school, is there
The discretion to have even one is up to the principal, but of course we work together and everybody knows we need guidance counselors, right? So we're very sure about that. So every school has at least one. Many of our schools, especially our middle schools, have 2 and 3 guidance counselors.
Okay, so next up we have Kim. Kim, can you unmute yourself?
Hi, good evening. My name is Kim. I'll be quick. I had two points. One is in regards to the LIC zoning and in general, is how can everyone be more proactive in the future? And I know we say this all the time as a resident here of LIC, we've been hearing this for years, but in regards to working together with the community board, the SEA, other departments to stop overcrowding. These towers should not have approval to be developed without a commitment to support the population, full stop. And how can we, thank you, Deborah, how can we work with them and get more power as, you know, parents, as educators, key pillars of the community to make sure that that happens? So that's, you know, I know we're not going to get the answer in the 30 seconds I have left maybe, but we really need to work and press on this issue. And I certainly would love to help champion that, but we've got to work with community boards, councilmen. It's like, no, you cannot approve these towers without the support that everybody needs. And then my only other comment is yes, that teacher from PS 122. No. They need to be dismissed immediately. Thank you.
I should share with you, and I know you clearly understand that we've been doing this for years, but maybe 8 years ago, this council passed a resolution and called upon all of the city council members to pass legislation that said you cannot erect a residential tower of a certain size without also committing to a school and the infrastructure needed. Maybe we should resurrect that and update it with some of the current stats, because we are fairly powerless in this, but we can advocate, and we should work, especially in an election year, perhaps get some electeds on records committing to that idea. You know, we all we say, and all they say is, we know you need more seats, but you're 100% right that you say that and then you approve the towers. So we'll think on that and see what we can do, especially when district planning comes next week.
Thank you. That's an excellent first step for sure. I mean, honestly, the trickle-down problems that stem from the overcrowding, you know, figuring out how we can get students to school safely in light of a pandemic would not be as complicated if we didn't have to figure out the already exacerbated problem that the schools are facing when everybody was healthy, you know? So I know you know. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we have Kathleen. Can you unmute yourself?
Yes. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. This is Kathleen Essay. I have 2 children at PS 150 in Sunnyside, and I'm on the SLT as well as the opening committee. And we had a meeting today, and we were going over our prior plan that we had originally created right at the end of school. And one of the options we had selected was the A. We have a lot of students, we have over 1,000, and we have classes that can't accommodate the schedule of the A, B at the moment, unless we're allowed to have more students or get more teachers to be able to teach more classrooms. We're kind of at a challenging point where we can really do just an A, B, C day. But they took away the AABBCC option for elementary school students. And I don't know if that was in part with maybe what Deborah had mentioned, as, you know, if they're trying to do a pool of resources and doing remote learning in a collective way, that might be why they took that option away. But as far as like, that was our preferred option. And we're a bit disappointed that that was taken off and it's not an option for elementary school students. So I just wanted to advocate to Dr. Composto that possibly that we could try to get that back on with the chancellor as an option if we have to go that route. I mean, ideally AA and BB or AB would be great, but with the size of the students, students and without more teachers, it's unrealistic.
So if you send that to me in email, I will escalate that this evening to the chancellor's office and see if we can get, because we've done that with several schools. We haven't received any answers back, but many, you know, committees as yourself have, I'm going to say, tweak it a little bit, you know? So we're in the process of now of asking, can we do these tweaks? Or do we have to say, you know, fidelity to this program that they've given us? So we're trying to find out. So send me an email with exactly what you're looking for, and I'm going to forward it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so we have two call-in attendees. I will read the last four digits of your phone number, unmute you, and ask if you would like to comment. All right, so first we have 1984. That's 1984. Would you like to comment? Hello? I won't. Okay, let's mute you. And now we have 2146. 2146, phone number ending in 2146. Would you like to say something? Guess not. Okay.
Without any other final comments, it is now 8:14. We'll have a motion to adjourn our calendar meeting.
Motion to adjourn.
Anyone second the motion?
I second.
Thank you, Katrina. It's now 8:14. Do we need a break, or do we don't want to run right through into our business meeting?
A 3-minute break.
3 minutes? Okay.
Is that okay?
Perfect. 3.5.
Yes. Okay.
2.
Okay. Are you still here?
I was around Jupiter and Saturn, and I returned to.
Robert, I heard that Mars has a great restroom.
They do. Amina and Fatima and Nuala, when you're around, just let us know. And Katrina.
I'm in.
Oh, thank you, Amina.
You're welcome.
Oh, thank you, Fatima. Ironically, I wasn't timing. Are we ready to go?
I think we've got, if we've got six, we can go. 3 minutes.
Perfect. So read the roll call?
If you can.
If you don't mind.
Oh, perfect.
We'll call Deborah the meeting Alexander. To order.
Okay.
We'll call the business meeting to order. Shannon, please read the roll call.
Perfect. Thanks. Ms. Deborah Alexander.
Present.
Mr. Roberto Cruz.
Present.
Mr. Jonathan.
Present.
Ms. Katrina Harris.
Katrina.
Present.
Thank you. Ms. Fatima Lakari.
Present.
Shannon, myself. Ms. Amina.
Present.
And Ms. Nuala.
Present.
Thank you. And Mr. Scott Sharon.
His phone died.
Okay, we'll have a, thank you, Shannon. We'll have a motion to dispense with the reading of the minutes for the June 16, 2020 calendar and business meeting and the June 25 special meeting and accept them as presented.
Motion.
Thank you, Deborah. Do we have a second?
Amina.
Thank you, Amina. All in favor, please show their hands.
Me. I took the because I have to take my scarf. This is why I turned the camera off.
Okay.
It's getting hot in the room.
I don't know. We have enough. That's Amina's affirmative. Katrina Fatima?
Yes. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you very much. Deb, we'll run into it. Next, first is the approval of the 2020-2021 budget.
Great.
You want me to share the screen, Deb?
Yes, please.
Please.
Share screen. Oh, for anyone who wasn't on our call with Diana, she believes that we have maintained our $25,000 budget.
Tough to find it. Where did it go?
Which is, if true, is great. We don't have a ton of expenses that we expect. But I'm hoping that we can pay it forward in some ways to the districts. One thing I Gail and I were mentioning was potential buying. We found these great masks that are see-through for the face, for the mouth part, and we can buy them in bulk. But Dr. Composto and Diana said that the DOE is providing all of that, so we have in our back pocket potentially lending a hand on the mask front, but they say that they've got it.
So this budget, it's just the initial budget schedule based on last year's expenses. I did allow money in for meeting expenses for hopefully to have our education summit in the spring, hopefully. And it's a living document, and we can change this at any time if the need arises. We're not locked into anything. It's just to get started.
Okay. I think because it's recorded, Gail, I don't know that we have to read it all into the record.
No, I don't think so.
So I would like to then make a motion to accept the budget as, unless anyone wants to speak to it and has any other thoughts about the budget.
I just have a question. Are we able to, I was going to bring up later and I should have had it added to the, but I wanted to talk a little bit about our role in website maintenance sometime in this meeting. And I just wanted to ask whether we would have the possibility of using some of this money to, like, for instance, hire somebody to do some sort of just like very low level clerical kind of stuff, like amassing information, checking links, that kind of stuff on the website.
Could you explain that a little more? I'm not sure I understand.
So some of the things that we need to do for the website are, like, we need to check, there's a lot of broken links because we're using links from the old site and they're no longer valid. So we need to go through the whole site and check all of that and update the links. Like, that's something that we as a CEC should probably do, but it's also something that with very little training, we could hire somebody to do as well. It's not a lot of work. It may not be worth training them. I'm just asking to know if this is something that's within the possibility.
I don't know.
I don't see why it wouldn't fall under website maintenance. That $2,400 is spent, or is that a ballpark for?
That's $200 per month.
Okay, so that's all gone. So we'd have to put more money in for the website maintenance.
Yes.
I don't see why we couldn't get a bid from someone, a proposal from someone, and then we can check it. I think we'd need to know how much it costs and what it, you know, how much of an expenditure it would be. But we should run it by Diana at our next meeting to see if who's our...
Dragomira.
Dragomira, thank you.
We would need to know if a vendor number is needed. I don't know the parameters of any of that. We would have to ask.
Okay. Yeah, well, we can ask first, and then I have no idea how to contact that kind of a person. If you do, then maybe we can get an idea of how much it would be. And it wouldn't be under our website, our guy, Bill. No. He wouldn't do that.
No.
He's a builder.
No, because, no. Okay. No. And it's something that I honestly think that we should probably be doing as a council, and we can talk about that later. Anyway, I just sort of, and we can do both. So.
Jonathan, could you send me an email outlining exactly what you're referring to so then I can forward that to Dragomir to get some idea of what, you know, what we can and can't do? Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Any other thoughts about the budget? I don't know that we should officially count on it being 25 because they haven't released it one way or another, but Diana said that since they haven't said no, we could put it in as 25, but let's keep that in mind too. So I'm going to make a motion then to accept the budget, the current budget as presented.
I second.
Yes. Can we get out of this screen, Gail, so I can see people?
Sorry.
That's okay. Yes. Okay, so if you raise your hand if you approve, and I will count.
I do.
3, Amina, 4, Mia's.
Yes.
Thank you. 6, Fatima. Okay, Nula.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. That's everybody.
Okay.
Next on our agenda is the meeting schedule. It seems the September meeting was moved to the third Tuesday. We didn't get the calendar, though, in our packet.
You mean the school calendar?
No, this calendar. Did we get this calendar? Oh, I guess we did. We did, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So September 15th?
Right, to the third Tuesday to give people a little chance.
You need $70?
And then
you need me to transfer something?
Channing, you mute. Channing,
you gotta put your phone on mute.
Okay, I muted. Okay. Okay. If you notice in April, the second Tuesday is April 13th, which is the first day of Ramadan. I don't know if that interfere, if the meeting interferes with that.
Well, you know, we can also, since it's TBD, we can also wait. Does anybody know if having a meeting at 6:30 on the first day of Ramadan would be a problem?
First of all, is it all the meeting going to be at 6:30 or at 6 o'clock? Because if it's going to be on that day at 6 o'clock, like half hour or like 45 minutes wouldn't be a problem.
Every meeting is 6:30 except for the July meeting, which has the 6 o'clock. Yep.
Okay. I don't think it would be a problem.
Okay.
What do you think, Amina?
To be honest with you, I've been with them for, this is my third year, and all the time when I'm fasting, I've been with them, and by chance, when the fasting time it's arrived, they give me like 5 minutes to break my fasting. After that, we finish whatever we have to do, and I get chance to eat until I get home. I don't think so it's going to be a problem.
So I just want to make sure that we're thinking of our community as well. Are there other Muslims who maybe would have an issue, even if you two don't?
Depend on their husbands. If the husband give them permission to be late, it's fine. Sometimes they are the one who's supposed to prepare the table and serve the feast for the family. This is what I mean.
Then why don't we just err on the side of caution and change that?
Can we make it a week earlier?
A week earlier is probably going to be the spring break.
Yeah, we haven't had a school calendar yet.
Right.
So, so we don't know when anything is going to be and what it's going to be. So let's put TBD on April.
Okay. I will change that.
Until we get a school calendar, and then we can figure out if we do the week before or the week after.
Okay. You got it. Okay.
Okay, next on our to-do list, this
is okay for everybody, because I'm going to put it out tomorrow. That's why I'm asking. Oh, we're good?
Yes.
Okay. It's ironic we don't even know the first day of school yet. But
I know. Okay.
I guess we have to make a decision one way or the other. Might as well put something out there.
The
other date seemed fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Stop sharing.
Hey, thank you, Gail.
Is that 6:30 time? Just our convention?
The bylaws.
Yep.
It's the bylaws. Okay.
Is 6:30 late or early?
I guess my thought would be that, especially in the Zoom world, it seems a little bit early because a little bit later, you know, people can have dinner and then, you know, have the meeting afterwards. And I know that some other councils have their meetings a little bit later. So, but if it's in the bylaws, I don't think it's worth us.
Well, my only concern is that we go late and public speaking is late. And so sometimes people then are waiting a really long time to speak. So that would be my flip side concern. We've routinely gone till 10 and, you know, public speaking not till 9:30. I hear you. It's something to think about.
Next, with regards to liaison assignments, everyone on the council would have received an email stating their current schools. Does anyone have any thoughts on it?
My thought is that, you know, we are not in a time when we can go to our schools. I don't know how that changes things. It certainly makes it easier to attend meetings. I'm perfectly comfortable keeping our liaison schools the way they are, but also open to changing if folks want to change.
I would also invite our members, even if we can't visit schools, you know, we can gain access to their email addresses, their contact information for the mm-hmm. principals. I have a couple of good dialogues going on now, so I would still invite our members to, you know, keep in touch with the principals. You may need them, they may need you at some point. So as far as the liaison list as it currently stands, I'm A-okay with it. Does anyone have any thoughts, any edits they would like to make?
So I agree with you and Deb. I think that I'm okay with the liaison schools staying where they are. And Robert, you did answer the question because I was just getting ready to ask about the C. Will we be able to reach out to our principals and talk to them through email?
Yeah. Good idea.
Yeah, I'm doing it now. It's I support that 100%. You know, it's good for them to know that they have an outlet as well, because some are just in the general community that will be there for them. I think it's been helpful. I think it's helpful to them, and it's helpful to me, you know, knowing that, you know, I was able to get in touch with online forums that I may not have otherwise been able to attend, you know, hear issues from other parent cohorts. It's been beneficial on my end. So I think it's, might as well use technology to its fullest extent as best we can. So I would 100% be supportive of that, reaching out to the principals. And guess what? A couple didn't respond to me, and that's A-okay too. They probably have 1,000 things on their plate. When the time comes, I'll reach out to them, and maybe in a month or two, when more information comes down the pike. But it's communication doesn't hurt. I always think that's the better thing, the best thing we can do.
Great.
So we'll keep it as is for the time being. And, you know, and if anybody has any problems reaching out to the principal, you know, talk to Gail, talk to me or Deborah. If we have anything we can do to help you guys out, we're 100% behind you.
Yeah, and I think needless to say, if somebody has a school that they aren't comfortable with for whatever reason or want to switch, you know, I think many of us would be up for switching. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring it up.
I'm keeping all of my schools. I don't want to switch.
Okay. next on committee assignments. Gail, if you could pop that up. You received this email also. You know, I heard some good things today, the possibility of something on race relations in our district. I think it's coming up to fore, and this is the right time to, you know, everyone knows that there's problems, and not all of us are cognizant of what the solutions might be, but working together, we might find something there might be the time for that. I mean, it might be time for a website committee, like for instance, Jonathan, if two or three of us can do that job that another person would charge us $10,000 for, maybe on alternating months or every 3 months, you know, we could just check those links, do those little things that we would need to do. And maybe we could do that in-house and save some money. So right now we only have three committees, our zoning, which is perpetual, bylaws, and special education. What do you guys think on these committees, and what do you guys think about additional committees that you might propose?
I love what you just proposed about rotating the website. If it's easy enough for, you know, and not to tech savvy, if it's just a matter of checking links that I can do on a, you know, quarterly basis, if a few of us took a turn,
sure, yeah.
If that's all it is, then yeah, I would totally be on board with that. I would just need a reminder, like this is the day that I do it.
And we can't ask Gail to do it. That's the caveat.
Right. and then, so yeah, so I brought up the idea of this committee. I think the right thing to do is involve the community. And I think that includes, you know, it includes someone, at least one person from all of the major areas, you know, Corona, Jackson Heights, Long Island City, Astoria, like we need people from all of these places. I don't feel equipped to make decisions on this front. I would even consider possibly spending some money on a facilitator who might be able to lead us in a good direction. I don't know, but I do know that I think we have to respond to what happened. But Anna Lee spoke so beautifully about the fact that it's not one thing, and if this is what we're seeing on the street, imagine what we're not seeing. I've heard this before. If what we see on video is on video, imagine what we're not seeing, you know, that's not on video.
And even Shannon and Katrina spoke about some of their personal experiences, yeah, that I'm not too cognizant of aware of what happened there. And I think many people don't. And it's not just about, you know, inflaming everything, but how do we rectify it? How do we remedy it? What can we do to make things better? I'm sorry for cutting you.
Yes,
cutting
no, absolutely. There. So I don't want to inject too much of what I think into this. I think it's sort of a cop out to be like, I think something needs to be done, but I don't know what to do. So I'm I don't know what you guys think. I think something needs to be done though for as a council to make a statement and potentially advocate in this area. My initial off the cuff thought was first I was thinking a resolution or a letter, but you know, that can ring pretty hollow. So I think a community CEC committee might be, I mean, we were sort of talking about this with D30 Equity now, with visiting all the schools, but you know, that's a long-term prospect. I think this summer we should, you know, July and August should be our time frame to put something together. It's so easy with Zoom. I don't know how to sort of put the call out for community members. I don't know.
So I mean, I'll say that I have not seen the video and I only heard of this incident during this meeting. But I do think that I absolutely support a committee. I think, you know, whether we call it an equity committee, a racial justice committee, whatever it's called, mm-hmm. I think it should not be about this incident. I mean, and I think that's what Anna was saying.
Yeah,
you know, if we want to come up with a statement about this incident, that's one thing, and perhaps we could involve a committee in doing that, but the committee should be about larger structural issues. And I think that I think that maybe it's enough to sort of bring it up and for us all to think about ways to best constitute this committee over the next few weeks. You know, I hadn't been thinking about this. I don't know if other members had been, but I think that's absolutely right, that how we constitute the committee, what its charge is are super important here.
I agree.
Well, I agree with what Deb and Jonathan was saying and Robert. We need to come up with something creative where it doesn't seem like you're coming off offensive. Let me see. And yeah, reach out to the community and maybe get somebody to represent Long Island City, Astoria, Sunnyside. You know, maybe we should get the parents involved in that, and then form the committee. But what I most definitely would like to work on, because the DOE use it a lot, and I do take it offensive. I mean, I don't know about Shannon, but once again, I could speak for myself. And I'm quite sure Amina and Fatima will probably feel the same way. Yes. I don't like the black and brown. And I really do think we need to stop using that. And I noticed that a lot of parents that call, they say the same thing. They're using the black and the brown. Because once again, this is what the DOE uses and put on documents. And I truly do think that we shouldn't use that anymore. Because to me, I take it offensive. And that's basically it. So once again, whatever Jonathan came up with, great ideas. Deb, you have a great idea. I hope the rest of the council come upon and come up with some great ideas, and we all work on this together as a council. Where
so
just make it right.
Would we like to then form just some brainstorming with those on the council who are interested in like the next 2 weeks, so that we can then bring to our next meeting some thoughts about what we've come up with in terms of just forming a committee?
Yes, I agree.
So who is interested in being involved in this? I mean, everybody can.
Me.
Great.
Everybody, we're supposed to be, all of us, CEC members supposed to be in this, because we are one word, like whatever we do, we agree with it. Like,
then how about this? What if we have, I mean, all our meetings have to be public. So it's, you know, it's not like we can come together in 2 weeks. What if we did some, if in 2 weeks we had a special meeting to listen to the community about, get ideas from the community to say, how would you like us to partner with you in this area?
To get involved with you.
Yeah. Like, you know, we want to hear from the, like a, you know, a listening session from the community to hear what they want in terms of very specifically, narrowly for this issue. And then, and we can get ideas and then possibly see people who are interested also in partnering with us. Not everybody will be, but again, I don't know how to filter that if a lot of people do, but maybe with Zoom, it doesn't matter. And a lot of people can, I don't know. I think someone from the community should partner with someone from the CEC to be sort of be the co-chairs. I don't know.
So one other thought I had is that I think we should reach out to FACE because I know that they are thinking about these kinds of issues as well for CECs and other parent groups around the city. They might have ideas for facilitators or other resources that we might use. And so I think, like, you know, let's not reinvent the wheel. If they have thoughts and they have experience with other councils doing this kind of work, we should lean on them.
I think it's a good idea. Can we remember to talk to Diana on our call? When is our call? We had our call this week. So next Monday, we'll talk to her about that. All right, then that'll be our first step, is to see what guidance and what support FACE can give us in this area.
And perhaps we can get you some support from the borough office as well. I'll ask and see if they have anything for us to help us.
Perfect.
Great. All right.
When is the next meeting with Diana?
Monday, I believe.
Monday, right, Gail?
The 20th.
She's been changing it up, but yeah. Her schedule has been weird.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's Monday or Wednesday, but I'll ask her tomorrow.
Okay.
And then Deb, when we get it, I will send you a text or email just giving you a reminder to ask her in the meeting.
Great.
Why don't we give her a heads up about this even before the meeting?
I will.
I sent everybody in the chat the where I saw the video on Twitter. You need to be a part of Twitter.
With everything in flux, any other committees that anyone would like to recommend? Health and safety, who knows?
Yeah. Oh, that was another thing. August sort of fell by the wayside, but LaShawn Robinson's department is what? Health and wellness, climate?
Yes.
Something like that, health, wellness, and climate. And Katie, who used to work for Kathy Nolan, who then went to Intergovernmental, is now part of LaShawn Robinson's team. And I spoke to her about, perhaps before school, coming to talk to our council about what the health, wellness, and climate things that they're doing for the social emotional needs of kids with COVID. So she said she would love to. They've been doing presentations to schools and districts. So if we have the time in September, I think August is just too packed, but I would love to have them come and talk about that stuff. And they said that they would be happy to. If we had the bandwidth, I would love a reopening committee, but I don't know that anyone has the space on their plate for that.
I think the entire district's on the reopening committee. We're all members in that little group.
Yeah. I would rather focus on this racial justice group for me.
So the zoning committee, you know, we talked about having a special meeting for 398, you know, I mean, could that be a zoning committee meeting? Could we, even if it's just going to meet once now and then to skip a bunch of time, I just ask that because, you know, our committees have not been very active, but it might be useful to have meetings, committee meetings, so to set expectations for the community that here, this is what they're waiting for. They're waiting for a zoning committee meeting and then it will be continued at the next zoning committee meeting rather than sort of just showing up at all our meetings and talking about all these things. Like there's a sort of more focused place to have that particular discussion.
I forget, it was only 2 hours ago, but I forget, did we settle on having it? Did we say we were going to have a separate LAC meeting or wait until August when district planning came? I forget.
Yes, you wanted district planning to come. And we would
talk, put it on the agenda to talk about first with the community and then address right. district planning. Got it. I couldn't remember where we landed. Okay.
Just be aware that in August, the first thing on the agenda is the high school application process and the Shazat, and they asked for an hour. And district planning asked for 90 minutes during the business meeting. So it's a full agenda. We don't want to add too much. Okay?
Yes. Great.
So I guess maybe we need a zoning, a separate meeting to have, I don't know. No?
Do you want a separate meeting after district planning comes?
So no,
I think the main idea is to just hear from parents, although I don't know that we're going to hear very many people who say, no, let's push it through. Right. I think everyone's going to be in favor, you know, so I don't know that we necessarily need a whole separate meeting. I don't think this will be controversial. But I also think it's very, you know, what we heard from a couple of people are really valid. The folks on the ground like Megan who know about, like I heard one school in Annabelle Basin, she's saying possibly three. So that's important to know what's coming.
I guess I also, there's also like, you know, there've been talk of plans from Dr. Composto, you know, other plans from the Gantry Parent Association or proposals. I would love to see those proposals and kind of like just get a better sense of sort of where we are, and that to me would be would be better done as a committee meeting, whether it's this month or maybe in a couple months. I don't, you know.
In fact, we have to be, even if we don't know the things that we need to know, the thinking outside the box just doesn't happen on the fly. We need to be having those conversations even before we know what's available. And to that end, I want to be including north of the bridge, Long Island City, and I want to be including 111 and 76. And so there are leaders there who we could ask to come and speak. So I think we should have, the question is when, I think we should have a separate Long Island City zoning discussion. Meeting. The question is before or after district planning, because district planning is coming twice. So maybe in between September, or between August and September.
October. They're coming in October, aren't they?
Oh, okay. In between the two times they come, because they're coming just to talk to us and we can sort of suss them out when they come to talk just business meeting. Then we meet with the community, and then we meet. Then they come and they hear from the whole community at large. Okay, so we will put that. We will schedule that at our next meeting. So at our business meeting in August, we'll put on their schedule zoning committee meeting.
Okay.
Have any schools thought that they needed more space with all of the different parameters we're thinking about for COVID, like some kind of annex, or is that something that could they approach SCA if they needed to?
I think COVID will be gone by the time SCA.
I get moving exactly.
We can be hopeful. Look, there are people thinking creatively. We've seen Scott Stringer and Ben Kalos and people who are proposing different things. And something that was brought up about busing is that the DOE is looking at the MTA, MTLC, and they are thinking about some things now. So but I don't know that there's time to implement any of these things mid-July. You know, these were the things that should have been up in April. So, you know, but yes, they should be totally getting creative with spaces.
Any other new business from anybody?
Wanted to jump in if I can quickly. I just remembered that today I met with the SLT regarding 300 and their new principal, and we are appointing Sunita Rampersan as the principal of 300, PS 300. She was our IA interim acting principal, and now we're officially, as of today, making her our principal.
And that is now public news?
It's public news. I met with the SLT, so it's public.
Okay. Well, we're in a public meeting now, so we can share that.
Yes, you can share.
Thank you. And then what happens, my question then is, what happens with the AP position?
Well, and hopefully now that we have a permanent principal, we can go back and hire the AP.
Do we think we'll be able to hire?
Oh, we have to have the budget. That's a two-site school. We definitely have to get the budget for that. Great. That's a two-site school. It's very difficult to operate.
Great.
Yes. We need an administrator in each building and then one poor person to go back and forth
and
keep it going.
Yes.
So we usually announce them at a CEC calendar meeting. Do you want to do that?
I think we'll wait till September. You know why? I have to still put it in officially, and then a letter comes to us. And since it sounds like our August meeting is really backed up, I think September might be even better.
All right. You just let me know, and I'll add it to the agenda.
All right. I think September. We could push it through for August if you wanted to.
No, it's okay.
No, good. Thanks.
Gail's like, any time but August.
August is going to be a big meeting.
I know I'm speaking a lot here in this business meeting, but the last thing was the website and the possibility of a website committee. I don't know if we need a website committee. I do think that we could use some hands on, and maybe that means a committee. Like maybe it's a committee that meets once a year and then gets sorted out, like, what we're doing, what we need to do. But like right now, there's basically three things that need to be done on the website. One is checking links. That's going through every page and seeing where the link, if the link leads to where it's supposed to, and finding where the new link. The second thing is, and this, I don't know if somebody can help Gail with this, but the other thing is getting older minutes. So that we have, because we had, like on our old site, we had minutes that went back further, and it would be great to have like as complete as possible a record of our minutes and resolutions on there. Yes, Gail.
Let me just say something there. I've sort of been waiting for the summer to do some of those things. I'm very capable of doing those things. I'm not saying the first part, but getting that stuff to Bill. I also want to, just so that everybody knows, I want to applaud Bill. Because he hasn't been paid, all right? Mm. He got paid for the creation of the website, but not the maintenance. And in fact, today I sent another email trying to escalate it to get this man paid. And he's already working in July, even though he's not getting paid. So I'm trying to be a little easy with what I ask him to do at this point yet until the DOE catches up. Finance is way behind. It turns out all this money, I just found out about a week ago, comes from the comptroller's office. It doesn't even come from the DOE. So it's getting a little complicated. So I will take care of making sure the resolutions and the minutes are up. Okay, Jonathan? That I can do.
Great. Okay. So the third thing was something that is really on me, and maybe I'll just do that, which is that there are a few sections that haven't been written yet. So I'll take care of that. And maybe we can get this taken care of just here in this business meeting. If I can have like one or two volunteers, and I will assign you a handful of pages to do link checks, and you can email me back and say, here's the links that are broken.
Yeah, I'll be happy to help Jonathan.
I will totally.
Okay.
Especially, great. Yes, especially if you give me like a specific task, done. If I don't have to think about what to do.
So we don't need at least right now, I don't think we need a website committee.
Okay.
Deb and Rob, I will send you easy assignments to, great. Okay.
I saw your hand, Shannon. She was also volunteering. Maybe.
Oh, yay.
Well, I can help.
Oh, yeah, I sure was the check links and everything.
Shannon,
yeah.
Also, okay.
You can work together. Very good.
Awesome.
Great. Okay.
And Fatima will help.
Excellent.
Are we?
Shannon, did you raise your hand before about something else also? Did you want to add something to our new business?
Oh, no. You covered everything. I did okay. raise my hand, but yeah, it was mentioned. So.
Okay.
We're on the early side, so I'm just going to ask, how is everybody? Does anybody have any, like, personal news? And I don't say this because I know someone has news, but any, like, anything going on? Any, you know, like Katrina said, Jaquan is moving out in a couple days. That's a big deal.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Anything going on with anybody, with everybody? How?
I am tired of hearing all the complaints about virtual schools. Especially from the PSU parents. I mean, just, I don't think a single parent at 222 is happy. And every single one finds me on the street and tells me how unhappy they are.
Yeah.
Same here. And like, one of the questions that's been like repeated a lot is what parents of multiple kids should do if like one of the kids will be in the school and the rest home. So it's not a solution for parents that they have, like, for example, the same, like, all the kids in the same school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, my understanding is they're going to try and keep siblings on the same schedule, but I don't envy them their task. But is anything happening personally? Is our annual meeting? We never get to check in. We don't see each other. Is there anything happening with you guys? Anyone going anywhere? I went to the beach last weekend. It was the first big outing we've done. And
tell
it was
us, Deb. Tell us. We've been trying to love. Tell us, please.
I have never seen the water in New York look as clear because I don't know why, but it was great.
Because no, like- nobody goes to the beach. This is why it's clean. Come on, Debra. For how many months we are like?
I know.
4 months. Means it's going to be clean.
So what else? What's going on with everybody?
I took the kids up to Utica just to have a little outing for a little bit.
Really?
Nice. Yeah. Went to Utica and then Schenectady and then just took a drive down all the way back home. Yeah.
That's nice. How far away is that?
About 3.5 hours.
Nice.
3.5 hours. Yeah, just right through the thruway.
Mm-hmm. I know. I took my daughter in the car a few weeks ago. It was her first time in the car in 4 months, and she was so excited. She was like, "It's like a roller coaster."
Aww.
She hasn't been in the car.
That's so awesome.
And then with the remote learning, it's good that like Seth, you did have to go out because we still was like essential workers, so we have to transport the kids. So Brooklyn was able to like log on in the car. And everywhere she was traveling, she's like, "Where are you?" She's like, "Well, I'm in class, but I'm here from the car, Wi-Fi." So, you know, remote learning is kind of okay, you know, when you could just pick up and they have to just, you know, travel and they could just log on right there. So that was kind of fun, just traveling with that a little bit.
So finally, me and Saddam was excited that they opened back up the salon. So me and her last Friday, and we got our feet done and it felt so good. And to put on sandals, and when they had to have
more time. I didn't go yet.
So it kind of felt good to feel the water and have somebody. I laughed the whole time because I'm ticklish, but it really felt great. And everybody was social distancing. Everybody had on masks. It was really cool. But I'm sad that I only have 16 more days because my oldest son is leaving the nest. So I'm really feeling pushy about that. But he said that he's going to come and he's going to be with me. He's going to be every other Sunday. Sunday dinner with me, but we will see.
That's good. Where's he going?
he's moving to Harlem. Street where he got accepted into City College. So he found an apartment right around the corner from the school. So that's where he's gonna be. And he's still going to be teaching in his charter school. They talking about opening back up. So he's doing good things.
That's great.
Good for him.
Good.
Giant goose egg on my end. Nothing yet.
Nothing exciting.
And the worst part. Huh?
You shaved your beard.
Oh, that's about the big thing. I'm taking a course and it starts in August. So it's like, wait, it's mid-July now. It's right down the pike. Summer is going to breeze by with all this kind of apprehension, anxiety about what's going to happen in September for all of these students. You know, it's a weird, peculiar summer. You know, it's not one that's really lends itself to relaxation and just, you know, idleness. It's more like thinking, how do we stay a step ahead of everything? That's a ginormous cat you got.
Oh, Shannon.
I know.
You buried the leaves.
That's Mateo.
Seriously.
You got a tiger.
My little lion.
Oh, beautiful.
That's Mateo. And just imagine he was a rescue kitty. Yeah, he was a rescue kitty. He was so small.
Oh, so cute.
I took care of him.
Here's
he had a twin. He had twin sisters. They didn't make
no
it.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Some giant cats with you. Oh, my God.
He's like German. He's some type of.
Oh, he's gorgeous. I love him.
Thank you.
Aww.
Excuse me, sir.
So, Deb, you got a cat, and Shannon got a cat. I have a new addition to my family, too. I have a kitty.
But yeah. Deborah has a cat and a dog. Deborah has a cat and a dog.
Two cats and a dog.
Yes, and then I have a new addition, and her name is Zoe.
And nice.
She's in the room.
Mm-hmm.
She a little bit. Yeah, with a big bark, but a little bit of things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cute. Nice.
Don't bite me. Ow.
What's she again? A Yorkie? She's a poodle and a Yorkie. So she's a poodle Yorkie, right. She a little bit thing.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Composto, how's the bird?
Oh. The bird is good. I have to keep him covered, though. He makes too much noise when I'm in these meetings. You know that. He gets all excited.
Yeah, I have three birds.